stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics.
This is the Quality News Network. There's a new commander of U.S. troops in Iraq. Today, Army Lieutenant General David Petraeus was confirmed unanimously by the Senate. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is in Iraq on a weekend fact-finding mission, along with a congressional delegation that includes Representatives John Murtha, Tom Lantos, and Ike Skelton. Pelosi met with Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. The entourage will be back in Washington on Monday. President Bush, meantime, called himself the decision-maker today in response to the congressional challenge of his plan to send 21,000 more troops to Iraq. He urged lawmakers to give his strategy a chance to succeed. Bipartisan lawmakers are supporting different non-binding resolutions which oppose the president's plan to send the troops there to Iraq. The non-binding resolutions expected to come before the full Senate for a vote. That's next week. Today, Defense Secretary Robert Gates said those congressional resolutions undercut U.S. commanders and embolden the enemy in Iraq. It was his first news conference since he became defense secretary. Tens of thousands of Americans are arriving in the nation's capital for tomorrow's anti-war protest, a coalition of various groups lobbying lawmakers who will vote soon on the Senate's Iraq resolution. U.S. and Iraqi sources are now painting a different picture of what happened to five U.S. soldiers who were killed in Karbala last week. Original reports said the soldiers died repelling a sneak attack, but now it appears they, four out of the five soldiers, were abducted from the location and possibly then killed about 25 miles away. In Baghdad today, at a crowded animal market, a bomb blast killed at least 15 people. Dozens more were wounded. The White House has confirmed a Washington Post report that President Bush has authorized U.S. forces to fire upon or capture Iranian operatives in Iraq. Intelligence indicates that Iran is providing weapons support and training to terrorists operating inside of Iraq. In Lebanon today, the streets were cleared by soldiers on patrol and at checkpoints as part of the rare nighttime curfew. The past few days, there have been violent clashes between Hezbollah protesters and supporters of the Western-backed government. In Brussels today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice made an appeal to U.S. allies to do more of their share in Afghanistan. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
NASA has set the date for the first space shuttle launch of this year, scheduled for March the 15th. Parts of the East Coast are experiencing a cold blast. In Central Park this morning, the temperature was 9 degrees Fahrenheit. A molecular scientist in Durham, North Carolina, has come up with a way to add caffeine to baked goods such as bagels or donuts. Each pastry with a buzz has the equivalent of 2 cups of coffee without the bitter aftertaste. Toyota reports its global production in 2006 up 10%. Toyota produced more than 9 million vehicles worldwide, thus bringing it closer to the number one position held by rival General Motors. Durable goods orders in December up 3.1%, according to the Commerce Department. More Commerce Department figures indicate sales of new homes last year down more than 17%. That's the largest drop in 16 years. Prior to that, new and existing home sales broke records for 5 years in a row. 20th Century Fox, which owns the Fox TV network shows 24 and The Simpsons, has subpoenaed YouTube for carrying pirated versions of those shows. Fox representatives want to know the identity of the person who illegally uploaded those shows' episodes. Light sweet crude oil at $55.42 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow down 15 points at 12,487. And there's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Okay, don't you, South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Six minutes past the hour. This is Head On for a Friday night. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, you know, I'm not going to guarantee anything tonight. I may be reduced to just a babbling idiot by the time the night is over. It's what you see all day long. And after a while, I got to tell you, hey, look, I'm happy. I'm kidding. I'm back home. I'm in the home studio. I'm behind the home microphone. Things aren't echoing around me. I'm just so happy, happy, happy to be here. But it's the stuff you read all day long that sometimes it just, it's like some Star Trek critter, and it just sort of gets around the base of your brain and squeezes until you feel like you're going to scream. There's a poet out there, and I can't remember which one, and I think I've mentioned this before. It was a poem he wrote where he said, It's not the big things in life that make you crazy. It's the little itsy-bitsy ones that just pile up and pile up and pile up like sedimentary layers of sand at the bottom of an ocean that eventually just become an unbearable mass of rock. And we are under the unbearable mass of Iraq. Imagine, if you will, for an instant, that Iraqis have more guts than some of our own elected representatives. Imagine, if you will, that an entire nation, almost, day in and day out, continues with the fraud of, well, we can't say anything overtly nasty about the president because we have to maintain respect for the office of the president. There is a madman in the White House, and no one wants... Mainstream media? Corporate-owned media? Will they say it? Democrats? You know, at least Cynthia McKinney would stand up once in a while and point out the fact that the emperor had no clothes. Not anymore. Not anymore, because she was gotten rid of. for that very reason. General David Petraeus. Is it just me, or does that sort of rhyme with General David Petraeus? Was confirmed on a unanimous vote today in the Senate. I'd like to have charge of the congressional PA system sometime, so that, you know, on days like this when General David Petraeus gets confirmed unanimously, that, you know, you can just do run up the public address system gain a little bit and play a chorus of Home on the Range, and never is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day, and we are in such a state of self-delusion and such a state of blind royalist adherence to that awful little man in the White House, that not only is the sky not cloudy all day, the Senate would swear up and down that it was bright sunshine if the rain was coming sideways. Maybe I'm a little bit harsh. I am weary, yeah, because I said early on that I hoped for, to the extent I prayed for, a Democratic majority in both houses of Congress. And I got my wish. Sorta. I got a supposed majority in both houses of Congress. But that's about all I got, it would appear. Because after all, they confirmed General David Petraeus unanimously today.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
Yeah, damn it. We get it. Unanimous. Are these okay? There's a disconnect here. Either a large portion of the population of the United States at large is just insanely ignorant of the real workings of the Iraq War, or there are several members of the United States Senate who are profoundly detached from reality. You remember when they confirmed Robert Gates to succeed Rumsfeld? That was another one of those Home on the Range days, wasn't it? Oh, they all clapped. Oh, yay, Jesus, yay! When he said that there was trouble in Iraq. How much detachment does there have to be on Capitol Hill for people to applaud a plain statement of common fact? But they did. This is a Democratic majority. We had, we had the right to sit there and look General Petraeus in the eye and say, Buster, until you tell us that you are going to go over there and preside over the withdrawal of American troops from Iraq, you ain't going nowhere, and your pension is not going to reflect that extra daggum star.
Today we're releasing a document called the National Strategy for Combating Terrorism. This is an unclassified version of the strategy we've been pursuing since September the 11th, 2001. The strategy was first released in February 2003. Our strategy for combating terrorism has five basic elements.
Amongst our weaponry are such diverse elements as fear, surprise, ruthless efficiency, and almost fanatical devotion to the Pope and nice red uniform.
It's about the size of it, isn't it? Meanwhile, over in Davos, Switzerland, at a conference there. Iraqi Vice President Abdel Abdul Mahdi said yesterday, and I quote, "Iraq was put under occupation, which was an idiot decision." Well, I guess old Adel Abdul Mahdi probably has a little bit better perspective on it. And this guy's in the majority, okay? This is one of the Shia crazies. This isn't one of the Sunni crazies. This is one of the Shia crazies. They're going to run the show. And he says, you know, he who is benefiting from all of this says that the occupation of Iraq was an idiot decision. I'm guessing maybe he wants for just a little bit of English grammatical type stuff, because what he really wants is the possessive. This was an idiot's decision. And he went on and he said, "If we can win this war in Baghdad, then I think we can change the course of events. As Iraqis, we think we need more Iraqi troops in Baghdad, and we're calling for some regiments to come from other parts of the country." I wonder which other part. This is so frustrating. This is so incredibly frustrating. The vice president of Iraq has more guts than virtually every member of the Democratic majority of the United States Senate. He has more guts than Joseph Lieberman. He has more guts. Well, you get the idea. When does one of our elected representatives stand up and say that the occupation of Iraq was an idiot's decision? You know, we can do it real highfalutin and classy like. We can stand up and read from Macbeth about how it was full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. We'll get the message. Not necessarily that dear leader will get the message, but we'll get the message. How long, oh Lord, how long until we get someone who will stand up and say that George Bush wasted the lives of more than 3,000 American servicemen and women? How long until someone has the courage to stand up on the floor of the Senate and say that more than 20 or 30,000 American servicemen and women have been maimed forever by the actions of George Bush? And then, of course, you'll have some assistant spokes slime from the White House, as was the case a couple of days ago with Chuck Hagel's comment. Come out and say, that sort of rhetoric is not productive. You know what? It's time to stop trying to be productive with the White House. Do you seek a productive conversation with Charlie Manson? Do you seek a productive conversation with Richard Ramirez? Did we need a productive conversation with Jeffrey Dahmer? The answer across the board is no. And we will continue to have the slaughter that we have of our own, our beloved, in Iraq until such time as certain people in well-made suits and couture skirt suits stand up and say that the madness has to end. Oh, who was that? Who was that annoying self-help lady on TV several years back? Sort of had the Sinead O'Connor look going for her. Susan Powder.
Stop the madness!
Stop the madness. Is it because we're used to looking at warfare like a football game, and nobody wants to admit that the clock has run down to zero and we have lost? Because we have. George Bush can send 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 troops into Baghdad. Not going to change a blessed thing. You know, and bear in mind that these people, folks like the leader of Mahdi's party, Abdulaziz al-Hakim, these are our guys. You know the old line, he may be an SOB, but he's our SOB. These are our SOBs. They're the ones that are saying that the occupation of Iraq was an idiot decision. Now, I'm sure that this story is getting some play on right-wing radio today, tonight, whatever. And I'm sure that the right-wingers are calling for the head of Adel Abdul Mehdi. I'm sure they're calling for his throat to be slit, for him to be given the Hussein treatment. How dare he criticize his better? Doesn't he understand that we know what we're doing over there, and we've got multi-million-dollar war machines? It was Brillig and the slithy-toed gyre and gimbal in the wave. All mimsy were the borogroves and the mome reps outgraved. Doesn't he understand? I think the question, well, you know the question. It's more one of when are the people who are ignoring the fundamental tragedy that is Iraq going to stop ignoring it and start earning their pay? How terrified are these little bunnies? How scared with their little twitchy noses in the wind, unwilling to just stand up and speak truth. And make no mistake, it's going to take courage by the bucketful to do it. Because the right-wing machine is there with its fax machines and its blast emails, ready to make sure that Katie Couric gets the note. And Brian Williams gets the note. And whoever's doing ABC gets the note. Making sure that Chris Matthews and Tim Russert have the talking points. That Wolf Blitzer is ready with an interview to talk about how un-American someone, a senator perhaps, would be. For finally standing up and saying, end it now. Stop the madness. I suppose that power must truly be an aphrodisiac. Because for me, I don't know. Maybe I'm just fantasizing. But for me, this is such an easy, obvious call that standing up and doing the right thing is a no-brainer. And you stand up and you say, I don't care what Flush Flemball is going to say. I don't care what Glenn Beck is going to babble on and on, seemingly endlessly, between the radio, headline news, and ABC's Good Morning America about. I don't care. I don't care if I get reelected 2, 4, 6 years from now. I got the best health care in the world, and I got a pension that's going to keep me rich until the end of my days. I can speak the truth. I have that luxury. Where is that man or that woman? Where is the Senate leadership that, and the confirmation of David Petraeus is part of it? I'll come out and say it right now. That man's un-American because he wants to perpetuate this war in Iraq, and he thinks that following George Bush's orders are more important than his own morals or his own conscience. He shouldn't have been confirmed into his position. He should have resigned his commission. That's just part of it. The fact that the vice president of Iraq, or the vice president of the puppet government, the purple finger government of Iraq, can stand up and say that the occupation of Iraq was an idiot decision, but nobody in the Congress can do it, is under my skin. But what's also under my skin is the behavior of this Democratic majority thus far as a whole. We just watched the Republican minority in the Senate of the United States grind to a halt a pissant little no-good $2.10 raise over the course of 2 stinking years for the people who work harder in this country than anyone else. They despise working people in the United States. Oh, quit shouting, Bob. You're making my head hurt. God damn it! Where is the majority that we voted for? I mean, Jesus, Harry Reid, put on your sacred damned underwear and stand up and tell these little bastards that you will go nuclear on them and take away their filibuster just like they threatened to take it away from you. And if you are truly a majority leader, before you ever say it, you will have lined up every member of the Democratic caucus in the Senate and said, by God, if you make some sort of the gang of 13 arrangement with those un-American sons of bitches, I will see to it that you do not sit on so much as the Dirty Toilet Paper Committee. Next question. We put these people in. Not for revenge, but to stand up for the American people. Are they standing up? Some are. You can go and you can see the remarks of Ted Kennedy, who asked a simple question. Why do these SOB Republicans hate working people so much? And frankly, we probably don't have time enough in the show to go through the complete and honest answer to that question. Some of it has to do with the fact that they have never worked a day in their own lives. Some of it has to do with the fact that they are selfish, avaricious, soulless, motherless animals. Some of it has to do with the fact that they are being overtly paid to hate working people. And I'm not talking about their congressional or senatorial salaries. I'm talking about the lobbyists they love so dearly, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Association of Amalgamated Small Businessmen who really hate paying, you know. But I tell you what, we are fast coming to a point where we separate the wheat from the chaff and the sheep from the goats. And it looks like we got a bunch of goats. Not that I got anything against goats. But that's where we are. Tell you what, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Your phone calls at 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Oh, give me a home where no liberals roam, and the folks all think the same way. Where each house has a gun, a big caliber one, and strangers are told, make my day. Home, home on the range, where the beer and the cantaloupe.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Today, all Americans are feeling the pinch of high energy prices. And this winter, the cost of heating your home could account for nearly half of your energy bill. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman. The steps you can take to save money and make your home more energy efficient. First, give your home furnace or heat pump a checkup to ensure it's running as efficiently as possible. Proper insulation in attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, and exterior and basement walls can save 30% on your home energy bill. And insulate the heating ducts, even in unheated areas of your house. Finally, installing a programmable thermostat will ensure you don't pay for energy you aren't using. Program the thermostat down to 65 degrees for 8 hours a day to reduce your heating bill by up to 10%. You have the power to make a difference. You can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more energy efficiency tips, please visit our website at www.doe.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
mail, they listen on my phone. They're sneaking and they're peeking, and I'm never quite alone. They're spying and they're prying, but I shouldn't be alarmed. They're only gonna do it to keep me safe from harm. They call it Homeland Security, so they can do the things they do.
All right.
But I'm not feeling any safer.
2.5 hours to go, and I think I can keep it together. I'm sorry. Are you as frustrated as I am? Has the business over the Republican stopping dead in its tracks a stinking crappy little $2 an hour raise in the Senate enraged you as it has me? Jesus, they threatened us if we had a filibuster, they'd take it away from us. And we're just, no, you go right ahead. That's the way the rules are. We're just going to play by the rules because we're just your rule-playing people. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Andy calls from the UK. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, Bill. I'm all right, man. How are you?
Trying to get back to something remotely resembling equilibrium.
Yeah, well, what do you expect? They've betrayed you again.
Yeah.
Well, look at it this way. The Democrats couldn't let it go through with the tax break.
No. It goes through straight or not at all.
Well, this is the problem with your system. It's completely screwed. You know, what is this adding things to bill? It doesn't make any sense at all.
It's an old and dishonorable tradition.
Yeah, say scrap it. Introduce a bill that says this bill is clean and may only have what it's about, and put where it's about, and put that as the bill. And it says in the bill you're not allowed to attach anything. And so they have to just vote on it. Just do that.
I wish it was that.
And then put in the bill that, you know, name it like the responsible bill, and just always use the term responsible and irresponsible or corrupt. If it had something added to it, just if they try to add something to a bill, renamed it, corrupted, and carry on. You just got to keep putting things like this. I mean, people can think of better ideas than that, but, you know, that's the sort of direction you've got to take. You just got to make it...
Well, it's like...
Say the press can't ignore the fact that it's corrupt, because until the mainstream media start going, this is the reason the bill was defeated or the bill was knocked down by the Democrats, nothing's going to happen.
Well, I think you're correct, and that is disturbing because I don't know that the media is ever going to pick up on that. They damn sure...
If you have all of your, the Democrats who are now going to have to be interviewed by the media because they're in the majority, so they're the ones who sit in charge of all the committees, yeah? So they're going to get more time on the air anyway. The media won't want to, but they have to. They can't do anything but. There won't be much more time. But that means they've got the opportunity then to say, we introduced a clean and uncorrupted bill, and the Republican part of the Senate corrupted it. Because they want to make rich people richer. And they just got to keep repeating, the Republicans corrupted it because they want to make rich people richer, or poor people poorer.
It's such a simple approach, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the only approach that will work.
And I think it's too simple for us to comprehend, because we didn't learn anything in our years in the wilderness, Andy.
Yeah.
We sat there and watched programs and doctrines and departments named Clear Skies Initiative and Healthy Forests Initiative that meant chopping down forests and polluting skies,
yeah.
and Clean Water Acts that meant blowing up mountains and filling in streams.
Well, Luntz, who loves to portray himself as, hey man, I just do a job. It's not up to me what happens to the information I provide. He loves to do that, but I think a lot of people have got his name on their list.
Well, I saw, I don't know if you ever go to Huffington Post or not, Andy,
yeah,
but for somebody, you know, did some acid or, you know, swallowed some Drano or something and decided to let him put up a blog post there.
Newsnight, the BBC have had him on doing polling for Newsnight about our elections and stuff. It's sickening, do you know what I mean? Because, I mean, I made a formal complaint when he was on because, yeah, I don't see why my license fee, the money I spend on the BBC, should go towards paying that sick little bastard money. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I really, you know, if I saw him in the street, I'd have to be pulled away from him. I just would. It's like, you know, if I saw Bush or Cheney in the street, I'd have to be pulled away from them. That's why they're never seen in the street, these people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because people want to have words with them.
Yeah. Well, you know, remember, right after Katrina hit, there was the young emergency room physician who walked by and said, you know, F you, Mr. Cheney.
Yeah.
Well, he got a visit from an entire division of jackbooted SS officers.
Yeah, I know. Well, you've got the SA being formed, man. I heard that bit of the speech. Ooh, scary business.
Oh, you mean the civilian military?
I mean the SA or the Praetorian Guard or
right, yeah.
Whatever you want to call them, the roughs that go around beating up people and burning down liberal or communist or opposition meetings and assassinate, you know, people and
you know, it was interesting. The camera, as I watched that happen, the camera panned over to the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
They looked shocked.
They did. They had
scared.
Yeah, because you know what? They can be used on them.
Yeah, I know. And you know, if there's one citizen they're not going to be allowed to shoot, it'll be this group. I mean, it doesn't even mean they're not even going to be citizens, are they? They're going to be anybody from around the world who likes wielding automatic weapons and explosive stuff. Come and join the U.S. Mercenary Corps.
God, that's a terrifying thought.
It's the Roman auxiliaries. You know, it's the Roman auxiliaries.
Yeah, it is.
Come fight for us, you Persians. We'll take you to Britain and you can go kill some Gauls or some Celts.
Yeah, or, you know, the slingers from the Balearic Islands.
Yeah,
there were excavations at I believe the site in I think what is it Eastern France, Alesia, Alesia, where they have uncovered the little mercenary sling balls that the Balearic Islanders used, and it had they had little messages written on them like here is one for your head.
Yeah, I mean they were the same as soldiers are now. I mean. And the whole idea of taking mercenaries from one place and putting them in others, I mean, do you know who manned the Hadrian's Wall across the Scottish border? It wasn't British or French auxiliaries. It was Persians and Sumerian.
Right.
They found tablets with
join them. The legions and see the world.
Yeah, and so now it's Nicaraguans and Bolivians and South Americans generally. And
old apartheid knee breakers.
Oh well, they're already professionals. I mean, the Bush wants to hire the ones who just want to be. The professionals are already hired by the contractors, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know, you think about it.
He hired the entire army of South Africa from the 80s.
Yeah, kinda. And you know, the School of the Americas is sitting right there at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Turning out potentials left and right, and of course,
turning out terrorists.
Yeah,
that's what it's for. It's a terrorist training camp. I mean, it's one of the few terrorist training camps that's actually been, like, openly talked about by the UN, but, of course, America vetoes any talk about anything America does. And, of course, then you're not allowed to talk about it anymore.
Well, that's because we ascribe to the fundamental rule as set forth in the Melian Dialogue. Great nations do what they wish, small nations do what they must.
Yeah, and, I mean, that's the problem, because America's taken the first part, the government have, and they ignored the second part. And the great nations do what they like is true, but the problem with great nations doing what they like is it causes small nations to do what they must. Now, you know, at the moment, the UN apparently is the first port of call, but everybody's getting sick and tired of that. Look at Nicaragua. Nicaragua actually got a UN petition against America, yeah?
Yeah.
What they did to them. Now, if America followed, if the Nicaragua had followed the same style of political approach that America had followed, there would have been bombs going off all over the U.S., and hundreds of thousands of civilians would have been killed. And to be honest with you, if I'd have been in charge of Nicaragua when America was attacking it, that's what I'd have done. Sorry, mate, civilians are civilians right up until you come and bomb my country.
Well, you bring...
Look at Iraq.
We don't mean to, I guess, but we're running off down a historical path.
Yeah, well, we are. And it's the traditional one of imperialism. You're boss guys, I mean, look at Cheney's smirk throughout that speech. Whenever he saw something on the teleprompter that was going to be good.
Yeah, there's a question. What was he eating? I mean, were those little nitroglycerin pills that he was popping from having to sit next to Nancy Pelosi, or was he eating Skittles, or, you know...
No, it's something to thin the blood. Lipitor or something, isn't it?
Like M&M's, I guess. Cookie. Yeah. Jesus.
Well, yeah, you know, his body organs are rejecting him. It's got to be something to do with that. But, you know, the vampiric look of death that he gets when he smiles, he just looks like he's about to lean over and start sucking some blood out of someone again.
That's why I think that's why Nancy Pelosi was blinking so much.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that was
blinking and holding tightly to a cross.
Yeah. Have I got enough garlic on the necklace under the...
Why didn't somebody just give her a steak? Come on, man.
She already had the hammer!
Yeah, that's what I mean. You don't need to give her a hammer. You just need to give her a couple of steaks.
You see this, buddy? I'm not afraid to use it.
Well, you know, look, I mean, we can see what's going on with politics at the moment. Chuck Hagel's being positioned for the... I'm not sure whether he's going to be adopted by the Bush as the vice president. But personally, I think Hagel's going to try and not do that. But Hagel's going to try and put himself up as the, hey, I'm a real Republican. That guy is a head case. And he's going to be the number one candidate for the Republicans. Personally, I don't think he's going to win. But you never know.
You've got to remember, I mean, and this is all such a psychotic little chess game that they're playing. The end game to all of this, Andy, always remember, the end game is, for the Bushes at least, how can we really, really, really screw John McCain one more time and make him like it?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're probably going to do the Cheney steps aside. McCain becomes the vice president, Bush resigns, McCain pardons him and Cheney and everyone, and then they have an election, and McCain is then screwed. I think McCain would do it, because quite frankly, he's looking quite vacant, and, you know, there's that whole...
If McCain thought it would advance his political agenda, he would sell out Jesus Christ, the Buddha, and Confucius all at the same time.
Yeah, I'm sure he would, but have you not seen him recently? All the shots they've had of him, I watched some of that C-SPAN stuff on the web, and he always just looks like he's not quite there, you know. I mean, he's getting on.
Well, forgive me, but I've always thought he looked like he was not quite there.
More so, Bob. You know
I've thought all along that he was probably the Manchurian candidate. You know, that they did something to program him there in the Hanoi Hilton.
As long as he's not as bad as Reagan. What was it once? Why doesn't the silly old bastard say something? We saw that on TV the other day. They dug the clip out. And it's Reagan looking straight at the camera, just dead silent for about...
Oh, like a cow looking at a new gate.
Well, yeah, I mean, literally 30 seconds, yeah, just like, huh? Is that gate open?
Yeah.
And then he just suddenly starts speaking from the little microphone in his ear, and he says, why doesn't the old bastard say something?
Oh, Lord, I'd love to have that.
Yeah, right. I phoned the BBC and asked them if I could have it, and they said no. So...
rat bastards.
Out for artists, like.
Yeah, they save the good stuff for themselves.
Yeah, right. Well, that's going to be filling, like, you know, whenever they want to take the piss out of an American president, they've got all of George Bush's stuff and quite a lot of Reagan. I mean, you guys give us so much comedy material. It's just a shame the threat to the world is so great.
Well, yeah, and especially given, we're talking Republicans here. I mean, Democrats do their own fair share of stupid.
Mm.
But not to the degree of... You know, Reagan, you know, why doesn't the old bastard say something? Or George Bush during the debates with Kerry saying, wait, let me finish. When John Kerry is standing there as silent as the cold, cold grave.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was scripted in, you know. They obviously said, well, Mr. President, he might try and interrupt you here because he might try and set you right.
Or the earpiece said, well, you're not getting it right, George. What you need is, wait, let me finish.
Yeah. But anyway, on to important stuff.
Yes.
Okay, let me start at the beginning, and then we'll see if we can work up to what you think I might be on about. Pearl Harbor, how convenient the carriers weren't there. Gulf of Tonkin, did something actually blow up? 9/11, did those buildings just fall down? Now, what could happen soon, Bob? We're talking carrier groups and a very small stretch of water.
And even smaller in the Straits of Hormuz.
Mm.
I've predicted this all along.
Look, Ron Paul is talking about it.
And Ron Paul's not insane.
No, Ron Paul seems to be one of the very sane Republicans there is.
Yeah.
So you need to get him on the show, you know, or speak to a representative of his or something. Because, I mean, you know, liberals need to hear a Republican say it. And then we need to go back and, you know, you can then have all your listeners ring their congresspersons and say, hi there, I just listened to a radio show where Ron Paul was talking about how we're probably going to start a war with Iran. Would you please try and stop the president?
Well, but it's not just Ron Paul. Now we've got, I hate to even say his name, Andy, but we got Richard Pearl.
Well, Richard Pearl has been disassociating himself from the Bush administration for the last 3 years, man.
But he's...
Over here, definitely. He's been very vocal in his opposition to the Iraq war and stuff. He's been saying, like, you know, okay, why wasn't it done with 500,000 men like it should have been? You know, I mean, Rumsfeld is ultimately responsible for the chaos and the farcical occupation. I mean, you know, if you're going to occupy a country, you've got to do it right. And Rumsfeld is just incompetent.
Well, Raw Story is reporting that Richard Pearl is intimating that the Marines will be part of an invasion of Iran.
Yeah, because he's hearing it from, you know, contacts he has still with the neocons. And Richard Pearl is an evil old man, but he's not an idiot. Do you know what I mean? He knows what could happen if they start another war. I mean, look, here's the thing, right? If there's a Shiite crescent and a Sunni-Shiite war, it doesn't actually help the West. It helps Exxon and so on, because the oil price goes up again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, is that maybe not what they're pushing for? A Shiite-Sunni war? Because how much oil would that take off the market? Saudi Arabia would pretty much stop selling oil, because all the oil they produce would be for their own war fighting and their allies. Turkey would be drawn into it.
Well, and of course,
NATO into it.
And of course, in the State of the Union Tuesday night, George Bush came out straight away and said, "We want to double the size of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve."
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's not doing that because he thinks that the gas prices are going back up, because he's proven time and again that he will not release the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to ease gas prices. So
no,
there's only one possible reason for having it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole point of having a Strategic Petroleum Reserve is so that if it all goes to pot and the world goes into war, you have enough war to fight, you have enough oil to fight wars on your borders and defend yourself. That's what the Strategic Reserve's for, not for bringing down oil prices. But it's assumed that oil prices shouldn't be allowed to be so rampantly out of control like they are now. I mean, remember that a lot of the systems that your government is currently abusing and dismantling were put in place on the basis that a capitalist society restricts this sort of avarice to improve the quality of life for everyone else, and that's called a limited market. And of course, they don't like that idea. They like a everything's ours market.
Yeah,
to call it the word they use. It's not free.
The F word.
Yeah, I've got another F word we could call it.
Yeah, and it's up.
Beat.
Yeah.
Market. Yeah.
But they're up to something, okay?
Well, you know, I would not put it past these bastards to start a war to drive up the price of oil, because they've done it before. And they'll do it again.
Well,
and if they start a war that means that, you know, countries with nuclear weapons on the border become more unstable, and countries next to them with nuclear weapons get even more scared, and countries north of them with nuclear weapons go, ooh, America screwed us over.
Well, did you catch the Georgia story yesterday, Andy?
What's that?
The Georgia story, the we busted a guy selling plastic baggies of bomb-grade uranium story?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah, and it's part, you know, it's part of the agitprop that's out there. I'm sure I just mispronounced that. But it was, you know, Georgian authorities working in conjunction with the Central Intelligence Agencies took down a Russian businessman who delivered a package containing bomb-grade, a plastic bag containing bomb-grade uranium, enriched uranium, and they went on to explain that the guy had, it was a sting that they'd set up, and the guy that he sold it to is supposedly a Turkish middleman standing in for some very serious Muslim extremists.
Yep. Well,
now, that story was followed today by Dear Leader's edict that allows American soldiers to shoot Iranians in Iraq on sight.
Yeah, how are you going to tell the difference between an Iranian and an Iraqi? I mean, especially when you're talking about Shia areas.
Well, we're going to make them wear a big purple pea, armband.
Persians, they don't go around wearing, like, I'm a Persian on a sign. They all kind of look roughly similar.
See, they're all named Xerxes.
Oh, yeah, of course, that's it. And they ride in chariots.
Yeah,
with a particular Persian design.
But I what a book junkie I am, Andy.
Yeah.
I just started a new book. I think the guy's name is either Tom or Robert Holland. He's a British historian. He had a huge historical hit with a book recently called Rubicon, and he has just put it's a new release called Persian Fire.
Yeah.
and he goes back and analyzes the invasion of Greece by the Persians.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to find, and it goes back to what you said, the unstated part of the great nations do what they will, small nations do what they must, part of the unstated part that you mentioned. He starts the book out talking about George Bush.
Yeah.
And I opened the covers and I went, oh, no, I hope this isn't going to be an apology. And it's not, because what he's doing is he's pointing out the fact that it seemed utterly improbable, if not impossible, that a gang of disorganized, separate, constantly feuding, constantly squabbling Greeks
mm-hmm.
could ever put up a united front and utterly defeat as massive an organizational system, nation-state, if you will, as the Persian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I read, the more I realized that the thesis of Mr. Holland's book is that the United States, you know, we love the Western tradition, and, you know, Western civilization was saved at Marathon and all of that. But his thesis is that the United States is Persia.
Well,
and then he loves the irony of the fact that now the little bedraggled states that were Greece in that scenario are now
what was Persia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the irony is kind of, well, it's quite fun, actually. I mean,
yeah, in a vacuum, to people who love history for history's sake.
If there weren't thousands and thousands of people dying every month, you know, it'd be quite entertaining. I mean, look, we suffer the problem of a completely insane bunch of freaks in charge of your country and a whole bunch of just as insane freaks in charge of most of the other powerful countries. And they're insane because all they want is everything, and all they need is everything. And, you know, there's nothing we can do about that. How can we stop them from taking everything without destroying everything? We can't. So we've got to just stop them from taking everything. Because we can't just give them the world and let them have it. We've seen what they do with it. They destroy our climate, they pollute our skies and our seas. You know,
well,
to eat fish anymore, Bob, because the concentrations of mercury in them.
Well, there was a recent survey of fish from every major river in the American West,
mm-hmm.
and every single fish showed unacceptable levels of mercury.
Yep. Well, no, it's a worldwide thing now, Bob. I mean, it's literally, unless you know the river is clean, and there's no point even talking about the seas.
Yeah, well, and you know, the United States is responsible for some of that. You know, China right now can't burn enough coal.
No, well, you know, I mean, look, the number one reason the British pollution levels in our across our skies and our cities are so bad? You.
Well, that's where
all the industrial stuff on the East Coast goes straight up into the atmosphere, gets caught by the jet stream, and gets wafted straight over and dropped on us. And so every year, British cities fail their pollution standards under the EU regulations because of American pollution. Because when you measure the pollution at source, it's far below anything that we're supposed to be below. Because we've got good fuel standards on our cars, and we've got good filters and scrubbers on our factories and our chimney stacks. But, you know, the eastern seaboard of the United States is one great big polluted hell, isn't it?
Yeah, and we just dump it on you.
Yeah, and it all comes over to us, or it all gets washed over to us.
But God wants us to, Andy.
Yeah, I know, but that's why China's dumping it all on you.
Right, because it, just like
the acid rain.
Well, just like just like the rotation of the Earth, some of these wind patterns follow the same basic, you know.
Yeah, they go from China to America to Britain, well, to Europe, and then around across Asia and then back. You know, it's a great big circle. It's more of a circle than people even kind of, you know, perceive it as. Everybody sort of sees the circle of life and all that, but it's actually a great big circle, as well as a great big cycle. And, you know, what's happened to us is, well, pretty crap, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We get all your pollution. What's happening to San Francisco and L.A. is pretty crap, too, because they're doing what they can. But, I mean, you know, apparently California's got higher pollution controls than Europe, apparently.
They have to.
Impressed. I'm really, really impressed. But they're going to be screwed soon, because all of the pollution's going to be coming over from China.
It already is. I mean, you can see the stuff from space.
Well, I mean, you're going to start seeing, like, serious acid rain problems like Norway did because of ours in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Norway got deforested in some areas because of our acid pollution. Now, how much more acid is China going to be putting into the skies?
The new guys? A lot. Yeah, scientific measurement, a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're going to be talking total destruction of, like, the creatures that live in the surface layers of the ocean that provide 50% of the world's oxygen. I mean, we're talking catastrophic climate change. That's what it means. I mean, when you say something like, you know, there's these creatures in the ocean, they live in the top few, you know, centimeters, maybe as deep as a meter. They produce 50% of the oxygen we breathe. And if we're killing them with mercury and sulfur and dioxins and...
Air's going to get a little thin, or thick, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, probably thick. Who knows? I mean, maybe there was a species on Venus and they just screwed up. Well, you know, the Earth could turn like that.
Yeah, well, it could very quickly. I mean, that's an acid atmosphere.
Yeah.
Dear
God. All the acid that's been locked away in rocks has been liberated.
Ancient sunshine.
Yeah.
Andy, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too, man. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye, mate.
Love the conversations we have with Andy every Friday. Do we have that right? Do we have the right to just burn up entire other parts of the globe? Do the Chinese have a right to deforest British Columbia? The forests of southern Alaska? The northwest continental United States? You know, we had a chance to get on the moral high ground and sign on to Kyoto. And then we could have looked at China and said, clean up your act. I had a story and I've lost it now. But it gives you a pretty good idea of what China is facing. A reporter who was investigating the deaths, and they lose them about 10,000 a year, deaths of coal miners there, got quietly bumped off in the streets. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. This is the Head On Radio Network. Jump right in, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral, numeral 4, Head On. Boy, I'm just addled tonight. I'm sorry. We'll be back after the news. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I hear the drums echoing tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way.
This is the Quality News Network. There's a new commander of U.S. troops in Iraq today. Army Lieutenant General David Petraeus was confirmed unanimously by the Senate. Bipartisan lawmakers are supporting different non-binding resolutions which oppose the president's plan to send an additional 21,000 troops to the country. The non-binding resolutions are expected to come before the full Senate for a vote. That'll be next week sometime. President Bush, meantime, called himself the decision maker today in response to that congressional challenge to his plan. He urged lawmakers to give his strategy a chance to succeed. In his first press conference since becoming Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates said those congressional resolutions undercut U.S. commanders and embolden the enemy in Iraq. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is in Iraq on a weekend fact-finding mission, along with a congressional delegation that includes Representatives John Murtha, Tom Lantos, and Ike Skelton. Pelosi met today with Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. Tens of thousands of Americans are arriving in the nation's capital for tomorrow's anti-war protest, a coalition of various groups lobbying lawmakers who will soon vote on the Senate's Iraqi resolution. In Baghdad, at a crowded animal market today, a bomb blast killed at least 15 people. Dozens were wounded. Iranian leaders said today they will bar all inspectors from countries that voted to impose sanctions for its refusal to stop enriching uranium. Also, Tehran asked for the removal of the official who runs the UN nuclear inspection program for that country. The UN nuclear watchdog agency, meantime, said today that Iran will start installing 3,000 nuclear centrifuges next month. That's a key step along the way to large-scale uranium enrichment. The agency director called for a timeout that would involve a simultaneous end to Iranian nuclear work and UN sanctions. In Lebanon today, the streets were cleared by soldiers on patrol and at checkpoints as part of a rare nighttime curfew. The past few days, there have been violent clashes between Hezbollah protesters and supporters of the Western-backed government. In southern Afghanistan today, NATO reports that an airstrike destroyed a Taliban command post and killed a suspected top militant leader. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is just ahead. Now this message.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discovered that it won't play on your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
A new study by the Centers for Disease Control finds that fewer than 4 out of 10 Americans with type 2 diabetes get the exercise ordered by their doctors. Danish scientists report that pregnant women can drink up to 3 cups of coffee per day without any negative effects. They found that moderate amounts of caffeine do not cause premature birth or underweight babies. In California, the state's Air Resources Board yesterday became the first in the nation to ban the toxic chemical perchloroethylene, commonly used by dry cleaners. California's 3,400 dry cleaners currently using the product must abandon its use by 2023. Toyota reports its global production in 2006 up 10%. Toyota produced more than 9 million vehicles worldwide, thus bringing it closer to the number one position held by rival General Motors. More Commerce Department figures indicate sales of new homes last year down more than 17%. That's the largest drop in 16 years. Prior to that, new and existing home sales broke records for 5 years in a row. Light sweet crude oil at $55.42 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 15 points at 12,487. NASDAQ up 1 point, S&P 500 down 2. And there's more at our website, Quality News Network. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 7 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know that. And just so you'll know, a little bit later tonight, we're going to have Brother Bob's Literary Corner. As I've told you before, Agnes knows my love of books, and every now and then she'll bring me an old book that apparently will never be read by anyone else, and because she knows that I'll read it. Books need love, too. And so, you know, rather than bringing me a puppy, she brings me a stray book, and I appreciate it. And some of them, there's tremendous amounts of information to be gleaned in these things. So tonight, Brother Bob's Literary Corner, a book by G.S. Graeber. I think you'll find it interesting. Let's go to the phones, though. Right now, calling from North Carolina, our good friend Lee. Hey, Lee, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm getting along.
Hey, you know, I think the country really dodged the bullet in November. You know, judging from the filthy Republicans' behavior, even as a minority, just think what it would have been if they were still a majority.
Oh, that's terrifying to even contemplate.
And it's amazing. They have no problem filibustering. While the Democrats, what is the Democrats' problem? I just don't get it.
Well, as far as I can figure out, Lee, the best that I can come up with is that we're taking the moral high ground. You know, we're better than they are. We don't play those sleazy games that they play.
There's nothing moralistic about the Democrats' behavior. I mean, they've sat around for 5-6 years and watched George W. Bush run this country just into the ground, into the toilet. They're sitting around now while they're slowly debating what to do about this war every single day that they slowly debate. And, you know, now they're off for the weekend. How many American troops are going to die this weekend? You know?
Yeah.
This is critical stuff.
Yeah, what did Thomas Paine say? These are the times that try men's souls?
Absolutely. On my job, if we have something really critical and really important, we work through the weekend. We work through holidays. And I can't think of anything more critical than an American soldier's life, or an Iraqi civilian's life, for that matter. And I just don't get them.
Well, there's two or three possibilities. One is that they just lack courage. Two is that they feel like they lack power. Three is that they know something we don't.
Well, number three, back during the run-up to the war, I was thinking to myself, maybe they know something that I don't, because I sure knew that Iraq didn't have any weapons of mass destruction. I knew that the president was blowing smoke, but I thought, our Congress must know something that I don't know. No, they don't know anything.
Well, I'll take issue for just a moment with you, Lee, because I think in this instance it may very well be possible that they do know something we don't know. And we know that they have a 51-49 advantage in the Senate right now.
Yeah.
And we all know who the guy in the catbird seat is.
Yeah, Joe Lieberman.
Sure. And so could it be possible, and I just throw this out there as a possibility, could it be that Joe Lieberman has gone to Harry Reid and told him that if he so much as tries to even intimate taking the filibuster away from the Republican Party, that he, Joe Lieberman, will put Harry Reid out of his majority job?
Well, doesn't Harry Reid or anybody in the Democratic Party know somebody with some ethics on the Republican side who can offset that buffoon, that idiot, Joe Lieberman?
I simply don't know.
Are there any moral people at all in the Republican Party? I can't think of one. You know, even this what, Chuck Hagel? I mean...
No, dude, no. Dude voted to eliminate the minimum wage a couple of days ago.
That's what I mean. You've got people now talking about him as a presidential candidate. For what? The only thing that he's done is he's come up with something about this war because, hey, well, you know, the writing's on the wall. You know, he's got to be reelected. But every other position that he's ever taken is against the common American people.
Yeah.
I can't think of one person, one Republican in the Senate, at least that has any moral fiber at all. I wonder about these people. There may be some in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Well, they have a different vision of what it means to be American than what we have, Lee. We see being American as being true to yourself, true to your nation, answering in the time of need. But apart from that, getting up every day, going to work, doing your job, doing the best you can by your family, trying to keep it all together, and somewhere along the way, be able to look up once in a while and say, you know, this doesn't suck. That's how you and I view being American.
Yeah.
They view it as being American as a game. or some sort of contest in which they get to see, well, you know, he who dies with the most toys wins.
Yeah. And, well, you're right, it's like a game. You've got the Republican team and the Democratic team. And no matter what, they're going to stick with their team. And I don't, well, the Republicans anyway stick with their team. The Democrats don't always do that.
No, that's the whole old Will Rogers thing about I don't belong to an organized political party, I'm a Democrat.
A Democrat, right.
But this is depressing, it's disturbing, it's terrifying, and I don't know how we get a change in this. But some,
I don't, you know, George Bush is already he changed the discussion already. I mean, coming into the election, it was we need to get out of Iraq. He's upped the ante so that getting out of Iraq is no longer no longer in the cards, period. The Democrats would be happy now just to maintain the same level. You know? That's
right, and that's an absolute shift in the debate. It's no longer get out of Iraq or stay in Iraq. It's stay in Iraq like we are or stay in Iraq with more people.
Right.
And we've been had.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, well, I don't, you know, everybody's, I guess, now focusing on 2008 election, you know. I think Hillary Clinton has it wrapped up. Unfortunately, I don't think that she can win a general election.
No, I don't think she can either. Because at best, 15-20% of her own party spits on the ground at the mention of her name?
Right. And I don't have that much of a warm feeling about her just because of her stance on the war and her stance on a couple of other things.
But see, they're counting on compromise, Lee, and they're counting on people like me who will say something like this. If she is the Democratic nominee, I will make no bones about the fact that I will vote for her.
Right.
And I don't vote for her because I'm a, you know, single ticket, yellow dog, straight ticket Democrat. I'll vote for her because I know what's going to be coming from the other side, in which case she is better than any of them.
Right.
Maybe it's a question of degree, but in fact she is better than any of them. But I wasn't that enthusiastic about John Kerry. It's going to be real hard to get very enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton.
That's right. But you know something? There is one person that could beat her in the primary, and I wish he would run, and that would be Al Gore.
Well, I don't know that. He keeps on, you know, he's fence-sitting right now. I think right now he's just waiting to see what happens Oscar night.
Yeah, but think about this. Al Gore, back in 2001, we're going into a new century, the 21st century. The future looks bright. Al Gore is poised to lead us into the future. What happens? He gets the election stolen from him, and George W. Bush takes us back 20 to 25, 30 years into the past.
Well, and don't forget that Al Gore got DLC'd, too.
Right. But, and a lot of people are going to say, well, why take a step backwards to a guy that ran before? And I've got what I think is a terrific slogan and theme song for his campaign. We were going into the future. Okay, now Al's running again. Couldn't his theme song be Back to the Future?
Yeah. Well, that's where we'll be. The question is, will he have an... That whole wooden Al Gore motif that we were given during the 2000 election, Lee, was entirely a creature of A, the Republican controlled corporate media, and B, the Republican spin machine, and C, the DLC, who had consultants in there saying, no, you can't talk about the things that matter. We understand you think the environment's important, Al, but you've got to be serious. You've got to be presidential, and you can't do that if it looks like you're about to bust out and eat an acorn.
Well, I think that Al Gore, as far as people that voted for him back in 2000, I think he would get 90 to 95% of the people that voted for him would vote for him again. And then he would pick up people that voted for Bush. And I think he would be a lock if he could get past the primary and past Hillary Clinton. And
well, the structure of the primary speaks to that. I was out driving around today. I was on the way back from the hospice house, and I heard a news report that said, you know, Hillary Clinton scoring a big coup well in advance of the presidential primaries. She's going to Iowa. And see, that whole media meme is already being produced for us, just like we were told that, you know, Howard Dean's just way too crazy to be the nominee. It's going to be John Kerry, don't you understand?
Well, actually, the Republican Party chose John Kerry last time.
Well, yeah, they did.
They foisted him on it. And the guy who, well, you know, Howard Dean should have been the nominee, and Dennis Kucinich should have been taken a lot more seriously.
But that wasn't within the media's game, because they couldn't, that didn't fit their horse race motif.
Right.
And they needed to put up the horse race, and the horse race was going to be Bush versus Kerry, and they had to start on that early.
Yeah.
Because the longer, you know, why do you think there's 2 weeks instead of one between the conference championships and the Super Bowl?
Well, they got to hype it up.
Yeah, sure they do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's what we're getting already. You know, oh, well, you know, Hillary's really going to knock them down. It's a whirlwind three-city Iowa tour in 2 days. How big's Iowa? I mean, we got listeners in Iowa, and I love them dearly, and I'm glad they're there. But, you know, we're not talking about, you know, it's a pretty long drive if you start in Johnson City, Tennessee, and drive to Memphis. It's not like that in Iowa.
Right.
It's not like going from driving from San Francisco to L.A. in California. She's going to three cities in Iowa, and here's the mainstream top of the hour radio news. It's a political coup for Hillary Clinton. Like there's gates or something, and she had to beg them to bribe them to let her into Iowa.
Well, I still say a great theme song for Al Gore would be Back to the Future.
Let's see, who did that? Is that
Michael J. Fox?
But I thought wasn't that Huey song. Lewis in the News?
You know, I'm not certain who did the song, but you know, it even has the Michael J. Fox thing.
Yeah,
they could have him as, you know, one of Al Gore's spokesmen or what have you in Back to the Future.
Well, as silly as it may seem, if he wins an Oscar, it's gonna have, I think, a profound impact on whether or not he decides to run, because all of a sudden that's gonna be his face out front in ways that will be deeply disturbing to both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
I wouldn't have any
problem supporting Al Gore in the primaries, not at all.
I wouldn't either, and I don't think most of the country would have a problem supporting Gore in the general election. I really don't think anybody that voted for him before, in their right mind, would not vote for him again.
You know what I'd love to see, Lee? I'd love to see yard signs during the 2008 campaign that said "Re-elect Al Gore."
Yeah, yeah. And you know, a lot of people that voted for Bush in 2000 are having buyer's remorse right now. And I think he'd get a lot of Republicans or a lot of independents. I don't know about Republicans. Republicans are weird people. But
well, if you're talking about the 20% dead enders,
yeah,
they're gonna vote for whoever comes out and says I love unborn babies more than Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah. I love Jesus, and they'll get the vote.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact that, you know, the guy may say he loves Jesus, but he doesn't love the people that Jesus said to love. Yeah, that's a little too complex for your average conservative.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just wanted to express that I'm for Al Gore. I'm for going back to the future. You know, we have to go back.
Well, I've got a short list, Lee. Al Gore, John Edwards, and Dennis Kucinich.
Well, I would love to see a ticket with Al Gore and John Edwards. But I don't think John Edwards would settle for the number two spot again.
Yeah, not twice.
Right. Now, if there was some kind of agreement with Gore that he would not run for a second term, but would support John Edwards, he may go for that.
Well, see, that's the basic problem, though, Lee, is that we have this whole 2008 cycle, and I have yet to hear anybody say it but me. So maybe that just means I'm certifiably insane. The 2008 presidential cycle is not about the 2008 presidential cycle. That 2008 presidential cycle is about 2012. And the Republicans, I'm sure if you were a fly on the wall inside the RNC or any of these hateful little think tanks that just wallow in money, you would hear a conversation that says, look it, we will sacrifice the presidency in 2008, especially if we can keep the war going, because then when the Democrat gets in 2008 and we pull the troops out, we'll say that Hillary lost the war. And that proves that she should never have been elected, and that clears the way in 2012 for Jeb Bush.
I don't think you will see another Bush run for anything for another 20 years. Maybe a third generation may try it.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. With all due respect, Lee, I don't think you are. The Bush family is hell-bent on becoming not just... They're the anti-Kennedys, and they want to become not America's presidential family. They want to become America's ruling family.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to imagine a scenario that... let's start in 1988. It goes Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton, Bush.
Hmm. And then Chelsea, eh?
Yeah, what the hell? 2016, she might be old enough.
Yeah, maybe.
it's terrifying to contemplate, Lee.
Yeah.
But those people aim to rule us.
But I think the Republicans right now are trying their best to get Hillary Clinton nominated. And as a fallback, they would take Barack Obama, because they know neither one of them would win in the general election. They're scared to death of Al Gore. I think they're scared of John Edwards.
I frankly think they're terrified of Dennis Kucinich. That's why they work so hard to keep him marginalized.
Absolutely. I mean, Dennis Kucinich's message in 2004 is what everybody's saying now.
Right. He's the majority. And the other thing about Dennis Kucinich, Lee, is Dennis Kucinich has probably the single most impressive political resume of anybody in America today. As an example, what was Hillary Clinton doing when she was 27?
I have no idea.
What was, let's see, when he was 27, John McCain was bombing brown people. What was Rudy Giuliani doing when he was 27? Yeah, and you can ask that. There's only one guy that has been trying to improve people's lives literally from the moment he became an adult, and that's Dennis Kucinich.
Okay.
As a member of city council, then the mayor of Cleveland, then a member of the state legislature, then a member of the House, he has literally devoted his life to the improvement of working Americans' lives. This guy is a card-carrying union member. He pays to keep his union dues up. And yet, if you say Dennis Kucinich to a member of a union, sad to say, they go, who? So, you know, and frankly, this is the mind-boggling thing. You know, when we talked about all this with Congressman Kucinich a month ago, he raised $14 million in his presidential run. Can you imagine that $14 million is not enough to put up a viable run for the presidency?
It's not enough to put up a viable run for some fantasy.
Well, that's true, too. But the thing is, you know, I don't know what I can do to help. I don't know what anybody can do to help. But I'd like to see him get get to talk about the issues on a wider basis. You know, and frankly, I didn't appreciate it the other night when, I know, it makes it sound like maybe I don't have a sense of humor, but when John Stewart referred to him as a leprechaun.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
Yeah. Of course, you know, that's the kind of snarky stuff that John Stewart does. But it's shallow. It shows an inability to appreciate intellect in this country, because that is one smart man.
Why don't more people refer to George Bush as Edward E. Newman?
Yeah.
Mad Magazine. He looks exactly like him.
Oh, yeah, and the attitude, too. What me worry?
Yeah, what me worry, yeah.
Of course, last night, John Stewart did put on his course, Darth Vader mask.
And, of course, mad. He is mad.
Oh, yeah. Great big, you know, capital letters. Crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, Stewart, like I said, last night, put on his Darth Vader mask for a conversation with Dick Cheney. And that was funny. So, you know, I kind of understand what he was doing there. But, you know, we've had nearly 7 years now of the detached guy and the Harvard management style. Dadgummit. You know what? I'm ready for a guy in the White House who wants to be in the White House and doesn't want to do anything but be in the White House for the next 8 years, who wants to work on stuff, who realizes that it's at best an 8-year job, and after that, he can golf or cut brush or what the hell ever.
I think the Democratic Party has three people that fit that description. I think that would be Al Gore, John Edwards, and Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah. I mean, Christopher. Joe Biden.
Oh no, Joe Biden. Don't people forget. A lot in this country. Joe Biden ran for president before, and I think he was knocked out of the race because he plagiarized.
Plagiarized, or was alleged to have plagiarized a document in college.
Yes. Yeah.
But see, at this point in time, I would move heaven and earth to work against Joe Biden.
I would too. And do you know, if you remember Joe Biden, back when he ran for president, he had a lot less hair than he has now. You do remember that, don't you?
Yeah. You know, I'd be willing to work against him because of that loathsome damn bankruptcy bill.
Yes.
You know, we've had enough industry and corporate of industry and corporate prostitutes. I just want a smart guy who wants to heal our wounds and solve our problems.
I have a problem with Joe Biden with corporations anyway, because you know, the state of Delaware is a corporate haven. I mean, it has just tons of corporations that call the state of Delaware their home base, and it's only for tax purposes. And for a state its size, it has a huge amount of companies that really call the state of Delaware home.
Yeah, and home in Delaware is a post office box.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And all of them, believe me, are in Joe Biden's pocket.
Well, I don't doubt that in the least. And he will do their bidding.
It's the same for Joe Lieberman and the insurance industry up there in Connecticut.
Sure, the Hartford?
Yes. And, you know, it's not just the Hartford is just the biggest one.
Oh, yeah, there's a handful.
Biggest insurance state.
Well, I'm tired of bought-off people. I know you are, too, Lee.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get anybody that's perfect, but I'd like to get somebody that's at least good.
I don't think you can buy Al Gore. I don't think you can buy John Edwards, and I know you can't buy Dennis Kucinich.
Well, that sort of narrows the field, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Lee, thank you so much, and have yourself a great weekend, all right?
You too, and back to the future.
Back to the future, all right.
Right.
They said that about my flux capacitor, too! It's about 27 minutes before the hour. Let's take a quick break and come back. Your phone calls are more than welcome, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is, after all, the Friday program. And that means that, you know, if you don't do something about the bee under your bonnet and the burr under your saddle right now, it's going to drive you nuts all weekend. Yeah. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, hello there, blue-blooded boy. Your bed is lined with dollars. I bet you come in oil. I love the way you take control and push the world around. United Nations, ha, ha, no one can keep you down. Daddy's little helper, silver foot in your mouth. The policeman of the world's gonna start another war. Connecticut Yankee in a cowboy hat. You're my hero, Mr. President. Remember the elections for the presidency. No matter the core won the majority. Your cousin Larry Fox TV declared you were the one. Your brother came through with his promise he'd get Florida. Daddy's little helper, silver foot in your mouth. The policeman of the world's gonna start another war. Connecticut Yankee in a cowboy hat. You're my hero, Mr. President. Now what you gonna do about our economy? You spent $3 trillion in a heartbeat. Now what about us folks who live in hand to mouth?
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The American people support labor unions, and if given the chance tomorrow, 53% of workers would vote to have a union. That's according to a national opinion poll by Peter D. Hart Research Associates. AFL-CIO Organizing Director Stuart Acuff says, with public opinion on labor's side and the suppression of union organizing by employers rampant, it's time for labor law reform.
The time is right for us to escalate this fight and for real action on real labor law reform. There's more understanding than ever that workers need unions in order to improve their lives, more understanding that the economy is not working for working people. And the public is staunchly opposed to employer campaigns against workers' efforts, and the 2006 election set the stage for congressional action.
The Employee Free Choice Act would make it easier for workers to join unions, eliminate employer intimidation, and put real teeth into punishing employers who violate the rights of U.S. workers to form unions. The Hart Research Associates poll shows that 69% of Americans support the labor law reforms the Employee Free Choice Act would make. Walmart will pay more than $33 million in unpaid overtime wages to workers, Jesse Russell reports.
The decision by Walmart to pay the more than $33 million in wages owed to workers came after the company went to the Labor Department in 2005, asking for a review of overtime calculations. The company says it had found small mistakes in the formula it was using to calculate the numbers, and that the payments have nothing to do with lawsuits tied to alleged payroll violations. The settlement that the world's largest retailer reached with the Labor Department includes no fines or penalties. In late 2006, workers in Pennsylvania won a $78.5 million lawsuit after the court found evidence that the company had forced them to work off the clock and through break periods.
Even with multiple high-profile organizing campaigns in 2006, organized labor found it difficult to retain members. The number of workers in the United States represented by a labor organization dropped to 12% of the workforce. That's down from 20% in 1983 when the Bureau of Labor Statistics began tracking the numbers. The public sector still has the highest number of organized workers at 36.2%. In the private sector, only 7.4% of workers are represented. The Fiscal Policy Institute says New York employers cheat the workers' comp system to the tune of $500 million to $1 billion a year. The illegal workers' comp underpayments are 15 to 20% of New York State's total annual workers' comp premiums. Here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
The number of Americans filing for unemployment jumped last week by 36,000. That's the biggest increase since the week following Hurricane Katrina. It also reversed 2 weeks of declining unemployment filings. Economists had predicted an increase of 20,000, with factors including seasonal worker layoffs. Overall, employers added 167,000 jobs in December.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
There's a meal in the dark.
20 minutes and change before the hour. We're a little over halfway through tonight's program. I'm Bob. A couple of stories. Well, I mentioned, first of all, if you want to see Ted Kennedy blast the hide off of these stinking Republicans, these reptilicans, who hate working people, you can go to Truth Out. And that was the line. I was pretty close. Quote, "What is it about working men and women that you find so offensive?" We have now had amendments that have been worth over $200 billion, amendments that have been offered. We've had amendments on education of $35 billion. We've had health savings amendments that will benefit people with average incomes of $112,000. We've had those kinds of amendments, and we're looking at the Kyle Amendment at $3 billion, but we still cannot get $2.15 over 2 years. Over 2 years. Kind of reminds you why the Kennedys are the Kennedys, doesn't it? It's on our send tab at headonradionetwork.com, by the way, if you want to go see that. Also at Truth Out. I love the folks at Truth Out. They do a hell of a good job. It's from YouTube. And he asks, "What is the price?" We ask the other side, "What is the price that you want from these working men and women? What cost? How much more do we have to give to the private sector and to business? How many billion dollars more are you asking, are you requiring? When does the greed stop?" We ask the other side. That's the question, and that's the issue. Make no mistake about it, they have on the Republican side 70 more amendments. 70 more amendments. We have none. We're prepared to vote now. 70 more amendments. Oh, yes, we want an increase in the minimum wage. We want this, we want that. But let's have some other kinds of amendments that have virtually nothing to do with this. It's a fair question that Andy asked early on, and our good friend Billy wrote in to echo the question. Billy writes, "Andy's absolutely correct about introducing clean bills. Where did this idea come from that allows add-on? Common sense dictates that the opposing party may kill the bill with such nonsense. Why can't this be fixed?" And I suspect it's another sad case of the sauce for the goose being the sauce for the gander. This is political wrangling. This is political rigmarole. And to be fair, both sides do it to each other. But, you see, we're in a unique position now in the Senate, especially in the Senate. Because for 6 years, we got a steady diet of all we want is a up or down vote. Just a plain old simple up or down vote. If you don't like it, vote against it. If you like it, vote for it. That's your right. But we must have a up or down vote. See, this is, again, I'm sorry. I'm sure it sounds like I'm just sort of beating a drum. But hell, it's a drum that desperately needs to be beaten. This is the failure of journalism in the United States. This is not one of those situations where you say, well, you know, both sides have a valid point. No, they don't. The other side screamed, up or down, vote. In the majority for 6 years. And they screamed it so loudly that our side soiled itself and wet its pants trying to make sure that they didn't take away their filibuster. And we gave them their up or down vote. Why can't working men and women in the United States of America have an up or down vote? Because that's what it is. This isn't a vote on a minimum wage. This is an up or down vote on working men and women in America. Will you stand with the people who carry this nation every day on their backs? Or will you stand with the people who put the burdens on those backs? You know, it's one of the things that I really do admire about organized labor in this country. Organized labor doesn't worry about minimum wages. Organized labor has wages far in excess of any minimum wage. But who's out there fighting for that minimum wage? Organized labor. John Sweeney, president of the AFL-CIO, has said time and again that the nonsense must stop and that we must have a clean minimum wage bill to vote on. Now, I see a way around this. Maybe it just is a display of my lack of understanding of parliamentary procedure. But they didn't like a $2.10 raise over the course of 2 years. So I say we say the hell with the whole bill. And we start over in the House of Representatives and we give them... We give them that working people demand no more of this BS of a $2.10 raise over 2 years. Working men and women demand, with the understanding that if they don't do it, we will find someone who will. Demand! How about a minimum wage of $12 an hour starting, July 1. Put that through the House of Representatives, then lay it before the Senate, and then say, we're going to have an up or down vote. And if you so much as mention the word filibuster, we are going to bust you. Because, see, destroying the filibuster in the name of Sam Alito, well, we didn't think it was worth it. Destroying the filibuster in the name of some freak from Mississippi or some freak from California, Janice Rogers Brown, or some freak from Texas was not worth it. Now, I don't know about you, but I'll go so far as to say that it will be worth it in the name of working men and women who put in not just 40 hours, but sometimes 60 and sometimes 80 per week. What do you think of that? They'll beg. They will, by God, beg in the Senate for an up or down vote on $2.10 stinking cents over the course of 2 years. They will beg for it on the Republican side. and they will tell us how much they like it. And maybe then we'll hear, we just want a chance for an up or down vote. Mealy-mouthed bastards. What do you think? I mean, do you want to see the people that you elected to run a majority in the Senate act like a majority in the Senate? Or do you want to see consensus built? With monsters. Do you really want to be involved in consensus with Mitch McConnell? Would you cross the street to spit on Mitch McConnell? Do you want to be involved in a consensus with Lamar Alexander? Do you want to be involved in a consensus with Bob Corker? How would you like to be in a consensus with Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions the Fud, or Saxby Chambliss, or Jim DeMint, or Tom Coburn, or Jim Inhofe, or Wayne Allard? Personally, I find the idea of besmirching myself on consensus with any of those thugs and fiends beneath my dignity. What kind of shape is your dignity in? Let's go to the phones and talk to Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
And as far as consensus is concerned, and I know I don't want to make Agnes cringe, but if the whole lot of them were on fire, I wouldn't pee on them to put them out.
No.
Sorry about that, Agnes.
No, she says that's okay. She's in the mood for it tonight.
Okay. Now, as for the Kennedy speech, the first thing that popped into my mind when I saw it last night, Bobby and John would have been proud of him.
Yeah, they would have. That occurred to me, too.
Yeah. And the second thing that popped into my mind was, of course, you know as well as I do, they're trying to kill this bill. They're just too much powered to do it openly so that they have to put their name on it in a way that they can be blamed.
Well, and
they just amend it to death, it quietly dies, and nobody's to blame. If they vote against it, then the voters have somebody to blame. Got news for them. They're grass anyway.
Well, they've 28 of them already did that, and every one of those 20, or every one of the so-called Republican presidential hopefuls in the Senate voted in favor of absolutely eliminating the minimum wage.
Yes, and I'm gleefully spreading that all over the net. There's an editorial comment after that YouTube video on SendEb. I got a little mad. Basically, it comes down to a message to the Republicans. Watch it, Bob. You're next.
Well, why not? I mean, why don't...
It will be next. I will see to it.
And meanwhile, like I said earlier in the program, we need to make it abundantly clear to the Democrats that there will be no gangs of 13 and there will be no negotiated saving of the filibuster.
Exactly. Because if they don't produce, we'll find somebody who will. And if that means tossing them out of office, well, hey, there's more where they come from. Politicians are a dime a dozen.
Yeah, and now's the time to start looking for them. And maybe that's the message. By the way, we're looking for primary opponents for you guys.
Exactly.
No more cruising through the primaries and spending all the money in the general. We're going to make you fight for every inch of it if you don't do what we need done. This is the people's business. I mean, I'm not asking for something radical like solar panels on every rooftop, although that would be a very good idea. I'm not asking for an end to meat eating or anything, any of that bizarre stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not demanding that congressmen have to eat nothing but raw vegetables like Woody Harrelson would like for him to do.
Well, there's one demand I would like to make.
What's that?
Convert every one of those absolutely filthy coal-burning power plants into using biofuel, 100% biofuel.
Yeah, biomass, garbage. We could burn our garbage dumps and run the country.
Well, no, you get, well, not just burn it. I mean using 100% like hemp oil or...
Sure.
Rape oil, stuff like that, that have no emissions. That way you clean up two industries right there. The power plants themselves with their acid rain and that god-awful mountaintop removal in your state.
Yeah, and Tennessee and Kentucky and Virginia, absolutely. But, you know, the point, Susan, is that this isn't radical politics.
No.
This is a $2.10 stinking raise.
It's a piddly little raise.
It's an offense. It's a slap in the face.
Yes, it is. It's offensive, to tell you the truth. Oregon's, you know what Oregon's minimum wage is?
No.
It's over $7 an hour.
Already, yeah.
Yeah. Because Oregon looked around and said, hey, this is offensive. $5 an hour, that's obscene. People can't live on that.
And
so people got together and said, okay, we're passing an initiative. Oh, and by the way, a question came up a while back with dear old Senator Lieberman. I checked with the Attorney General's office. They can't recall him. They don't have recall.
Unless the hand of God reaches down and snatches him away, the people of Connecticut are stuck with him.
Unless they want to do something else, amend their state constitution.
Well, they could do that.
Then they could recall him.
Well, they can't be happy with him. Well, I mean, I guess the Republicans are.
Oh yeah.
But I want to, you know, I honest to God, Susan, I want a straight answer to Senator Kennedy's question.
Yeah, what is it about that's so offensive? Because I'm one of those poor working people. I want to know.
What is it about working men and women that you find so offensive?
Yeah. You know, it's not like, you know, I take a bath occasionally, you know, it's not like I, you know, got deal or anything. What does this about me that it's so awful?
Well, the fact of the matter is the people who work for minimum wage probably work about 1,000 times harder than your average CEO.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, I've seen how CEOs work. Yeah, I mean, their hours might be a little bit longer, but you know what? They got great vacation packages.
Not to mention retirement
packages. They got retirements. They got health care.
Yeah.
And, you know, to those whom much has been given, much shall be expected. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No. And they aren't, you know, the tradition of noblesse oblige is very old, but it seems like they've got the tradition shorted out.
Well, the problem with your average CEO is there's no noblesse and even less oblige.
That's what I mean. They've shorted out the tradition. They want the goodies, but they don't want to have to give back.
Well, you know, is it worth trying to jam it down their throats?
I think they're incapable of learning.
Is it worth telling Harry Reid to haul his sacred underwear up around his shoulder blades and march into the battle and act like a leader?
Well, it's worth it in the sense that we tell him to do that or we will replace him.
I'd just as soon, I'm sure that there are those who disagree with me, but I would just as soon see, if this is about Joe Lieberman, and I really do sneakingly suspect that it is, I'd just as soon see Joe Lieberman get unmasked.
Yeah, so would I.
Enough of it, because one man should not be able to determine the agenda of the United States Senate.
Yes. Fine. Make him come out in the open as the venal blackmailer he is.
I agree.
Blackmail only works if in the dark. Bring it out in the open.
Probably scared to do that, too.
Well...
God, it must just suck to live in fear.
Well, their life isn't worth much as far as I'm concerned. They need to develop a backbone. And if Harry Reid can't do it, we're going to find somebody who will.
I'm all for it. I'll do the legwork with my senators if everybody else will do the legwork with theirs.
Well, my senator is going to be tomorrow night. My senator is going to be here in town. He's about to get an earful. I'm going to.
Which one, Wyden or Smith?
Wyden.
Oh well, that might actually do some good.
Yeah, the dear boy's going to get an earful because I'm going to be there, and I got a big mouth with no hesitation of flapping it. And I'm mad. I'm mad down to the bone.
Yeah, now, don't run up screaming, Susan, okay?
Oh, I am very polite, but I can be vicious and be polite at the same time. You just ask some lady in the South.
Yeah, the speech. Yeah, I'm not angry with you. I'm disappointed.
Yes. Well, it's come out. Anyway, I'm going to let you go.
All right, Susan. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, then. Let's go to the news. If you're on hold, please stay that way. If you feel the need to, if the spirit's moving you, pick up the phone, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob.
A fool. I don't want to get up early and I wish I had a good sip drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave.
This is the Quality News Network. Reuters News Service reports that President Bush held a private meeting with House Republicans today in Maryland. During the meeting, Mr. Bush accepted their version of the resolution regarding the troop surge in Iraq. It calls for the Iraqi government to meet certain military, political, and social benchmarks in the coming months. It also calls for a bipartisan panel to be created to monitor that progress. President Bush also met today with Lieutenant General David Petraeus, the newly confirmed lead U.S. commander in Iraq. He later recounted their conversation and said he told Petraeus to, quote, get over to the zone as quickly as possible and implement a plan that will achieve our goals. President Bush has authorized U.S. troops in Iraq to take whatever steps are necessary to protect themselves and the country from Iranian agents. By doing so, officials hope to diminish Iran's power in the region. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi met with Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki today. She and six other members of Congress traveled to Iraq on an unannounced fact-finding mission. Pelosi said she came out of the meeting with a better understanding of al-Maliki's point of view. U.S. and Iraqi sources are now painting a different picture of what happened to five U.S. soldiers who were killed in Karbala last week. Original reports said the soldiers died while repelling a sneak attack, but it now seems that most of them were abducted and killed later. In Baghdad, a bomb exploded at a popular pet market this morning. At least 15 people were killed, 35 others wounded. In Mosul, a bomb at a mosque killed one and wounded three. The U.S. military is also reporting the death of a U.S. Marine. He died today from wounds sustained in combat in the Anbar province.
The U.S. has banned all luxury goods to North Korea, including iPods, laptop computers, and snowmobiles. North Korean leader Kim Jong-il provides luxury goods to families with whom he wants to curry favor. U.S. officials hope that by denying these goods, his authority will be lessened. Today, Iran said it will bar all inspectors from countries that voted to impose sanctions for its refusal to stop enriching uranium. Also, Tehran asked for the removal of the official who runs the UN nuclear inspection program for Iran. Today, the director of the Nuclear Watchdog Agency called for a timeout. That would involve a simultaneous end to Iranian nuclear work and UN sanctions. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does
yes.
that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both?
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Regulators meeting in Japan have approved the first global contract to prevent the overfishing of severely depleted tuna stocks. Delegates applauded the move as a good first step, but others decried the plan as too little, too late. NASA has set up its first space shuttle launch of the new year. It's scheduled for March 15th. Microsoft reported a 28% drop in quarterly profits on earnings of $2.63 billion. The company blames a delay in releasing its new Vista computer operating system. A recent survey finds that planned job cuts in the media jumped 88% last year and will continue this year. That's because more people are getting their news online. Last year, new home sales dropped by the largest amount in 16 years. The Commerce Department says just over 1 million single-family homes were sold in 2006. The Commerce Department also reports that durable goods orders in December were up 3.1%. Union Pacific has posted a 64% increase in quarterly profit. Its revenues of $3.78 billion exceeded Wall Street expectations. Light sweet crude settled at $55.42 a barrel in the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 15 points at 12,487. NASDAQ up 1 point at 2435. S&P 500 down 2 points at 1422. You can hear more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
7 minutes passed, and we go immediately and directly to the phone. Gerard calling from Indiana. Hey, Gerard, good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob, it's good to hear you, too. I got so much tonight, I don't know where to start.
Throw a dart and start there.
Yesterday morning, I about choked on my breakfast because I was watching the part on the span there, the part of the debate about the minimum wage thing. And the senator, I forget his name, but he's from Cheney's home state, Wyoming. He was talking about, another amendment to attach to this thing, and he wanted to see some sort of tax. He called it tax relief.
Yeah, liars.
For the small business person, you know. And the thing that gets, you know, it's funny how the Republicans always remember the small business person when it's an election or if it's a controversial wage bill. It seems like any other time, the small businessman really isn't, you know, in the spotlight at all. But if they've got something that they want or something to defend, all of a sudden they're, you know, the big backers of the small businessman. You know, I wonder where they are for the small businessman when a big box retailer like Walmart moves into the area and all the downtown mom and pop businesses go broke because they can't compete.
Yeah, well, you know, the small businessman, not so much then.
Yeah.
But you see, that's the other thing. You have a better chance of getting a decent wage. I mean, it's thin, but it's better, of getting a decent wage from a mom-and-pop outfit or a small local outfit than you ever will with Walmart. So naturally, these anti-working people, thugs, are going to gravitate to Walmart. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
They're hypocrites.
Well, and that leads me right into the second thing that I wanted to bring up. Now, I've got here... basically, it's a transcript of a news clip, a local TV station news clip. Now, if I read this verbatim, are you going to get in trouble with copyright infringement?
No, you just I'll handle that part.
Okay. Well, this is just from one of our local TV stations. This was a couple days ago. We just had a Walmart opened locally. There are about three or four in the area. And it starts out, job seekers scrambled to be one of 290 new employees hired by the Ireland Road Walmart, and the competition was pretty stiff because there were 4,000 people who applied. That's over half the total number of unemployed people reported in South Bend, Mishawaka combined. Just over 7,900 people were unemployed in those cities as of November 2006, according to the U.S. Department of Labor website. And then they've got a quote here from the store manager. He says, our average hourly rate for the state of Indiana is right around $10 an hour. It's pretty typical when Walmart comes in, we get a lot of people looking. They know it's a good employer to work for. Now, that's a little misleading because, and in the interest of full disclosure, I work for a direct competitor to Walmart.
Okay.
I also work for a big box retailer. And when he's saying $10 an hour, what they do is average in, because I know this, we do this at our company, they average in, you know, the management wages, the people, you know, more senior people, their wages. If you're working for Walmart maybe for, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years, you may get to $10 an hour. But I can guarantee you, because they're a direct competitor, they're hiring people in at just above minimum wage, which in Indiana.
Well, I'm not surprised at all, but as long as you factor in the manager.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that guy's bringing down $60,000-$70,000 a year, so that'll, you know, that lifts that average. But, the other dirty little secret that's contained therein, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Gerard, you may make it to $10 an hour, but if you make it to $10 an hour at Walmart, you can just about bet your last dollar that you're not going to be getting 40 a week.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of ways, things they do, and
so if you're working $10 an hour at Walmart for 20 hours a week, that's a $5 an hour job if it was full time.
Right, right. And this little article comes down, it goes on. I mean, they talk about, and they give, you know, a couple of comments from people who were out looking for those jobs. There's a local, I believe it's partly state funded and partly private funded. It's called JobWorks. It's basically an employment service. They interviewed a woman there. Her name is Christina Jones. She's a single mother. She's got lots of working experience and a college degree. She was looking for a job. She's been looking for a job in public administration. You know, this is a person who went out, made something of herself, got a college degree, you know, play by the rules, as the Republicans like to say. And she says she can't get a job around in this area. She says the job market is terrible here, and when you do get a job, they don't want to pay. If I'm making $8 an hour on a job, I can't afford medical. I don't have medical insurance because I can't afford it. And, you know, I know a lot of people are in that situation. And it goes, the article goes on to quote the vice president of this job, their employment service, and we just had three major businesses lay off people, fire people, whatever you want to call it, downsizing, moved out. They were paying $12 to $15 to $20 an hour, and we don't have any new companies coming into the area to replace those wages. You know, and this is the economy which this stupid guy says is, you know, going so well.
And the well, that's a lie. I mean, productivity, they love to point to the productivity numbers, Gerard, because, you know, productivity's up. Well, productivity's up because people are having to work twice as hard to keep the same crappy job.
Yeah.
And the whirlwind that we're going to reap 5-10 years down the road, if those jobs are still here, if America can still afford to shop at Walmart, is going to be a terrible price.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to what I, you know, constantly say about how the, eventually the people, you won't be able to find a Bush voter, and people will spit on the ground at the mere mention of his name. You can't just point to a naked statistic and say, see, that proves it.
Yeah.
But that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're going to see the same thing everybody sees when Walmart comes to town.
Yeah.
And it's sad because it kills a downtown area. And I like downtowns. I like the idea of being able to walk down the sidewalk and stop in one shop and buy some stuff and another shop and buy some stuff and spread the money around.
Sure. Yeah.
But every last dime goes to Bentonville.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk in the door at Walmart, and it's obnoxious. Well, what do you suppose it'll do to is it going to pose a risk to your company, Gerard?
Well, the company I work for is a family owned business. They're in a 5-state area. They've maintained this area, and Walmart is very reticent to come into this area of the Midwest. I mean, they are doing it, and they are growing, but the company I work for sees them as their direct competitor. And over the last few years, we had what we called a Black Tuesday, where we had, this was 3 or 4 years ago, where they did lay off a lot of people. A lot of people were given early retirement. A lot of people were told their jobs were eliminated, and they were, basically, they just basically reduced the whole workforce company-wide. And they... It's difficult. It's difficult to go through that.
Yeah, because you care about the people that are getting hurt.
Yeah, yeah. It's, a lot of times it's people that you worked for, you know, long term, or worked with long term, and it's hard to deal with. I'm in a position where, I got to pay bills just like anybody else. And it's hard for me to see what's going on in this country. It really is. I sometimes have kind of a real moment of conflict of conscience because, in my job I'm in management and I'm supposed to do things and
it troubles your conscience.
Pardon me?
It troubles your conscience.
Yeah, and I'm supposed to do things that are. You know, I'm not supposed to do things that would possibly promote union activity or, you know, I'm supposed to not. But, you know, to me, for somebody in my position, I would almost rather. Now, the company I work for, in some of the states where they operate, they are a union.
But they're not in Indiana.
Not in Indiana. And it's hard sometimes because I see some of our competitors, and because I have to interview people to hire, I see a lot of people going to my competitor, to our competitors, because, and these are union, smaller operations, but union competitors, and they're union shops, and those people, they're getting the good people. You know, they're getting the more productive, the more desirable employees.
Well, I mean, isn't that the action of the free market that these people are so fond of?
Yeah,
they only like it, but they only like the free market when it works to their advantage.
Sure,
a free market that includes working people, they wouldn't be so fond of.
Yeah. I just, you know, so much of this stuff that's going on in our country right now, I just. I don't know. I just don't know. I just finished reading that book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah.
That was an eye-opener for me. I was kind of aware of some of that stuff that went on. But, you know, that is such a, I would recommend that book to anybody.
Who's the author again, for the life of me? I can't remember right
now. His name is John Perkins.
Perkins, okay.
Yeah. And it's, I know you're a student of history, and he tells his own story, but he's laying really out laying out the history of how we really, our foreign policy, and also basically how we got in this mess in Iraq. And of course the Bush family was involved from the get-go. It's just good historical background. He writes it well, and I recommend it to anybody.
Well, and if anybody does want to read it and can afford to buy it, we encourage people to go through the links on the website, because I think we get a penny and a half per book or something like that. So, yeah. Well, I've heard a lot about it. I haven't read it. I need to read it. Right now, my book list, my dance card's kind of full right now. But what you mentioned, that book, I've often heard mentioned in the same breath with David K. Johnston's Perfectly Legal, the rigging of the tax code. And it's a very readable thing. Once you've read it, it completely deflates all the economic arguments of these top down, trickle down, whatever you want to call them, the voodoo economics crowd. The information is there.
Yep.
But Gerard, there is a concerted effort to make sure that we don't find it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, because
if you read that book, I mean, I know it's been discussed on your show before about, you know, the possible compliance, if not involvement, of our government in 9/11. And if you read that book, I'm a self-confessed conspiracy theorist, okay? But if you read that book, you will see how that is entirely possible.
Oh, I think it is entirely possible.
It just follows logically. It from the information that is in that book, it just follows logically. And he doesn't really deal with 9/11 except till the very end of the book, and it's more on a personal level, and he doesn't really get into, you know, the kind of conspiracy type things that go on in other places and publications. But
I'd like a sane explanation of the put orders.
Yeah.
On the airlines before 9/11, and the problem with 9/11, Gerard, is that I don't care which version of events you buy into. If you buy into the 9/11 Commission, if you buy into the official, you know, any of the official versions, if you believe the buildings fell over, or they pancaked, or Building 7 committed suicide in a fit of grief over the other two buildings, whatever you believe, don't be so hard on yourself, because all of those, every last one of them, from the official government version onward, every single one of them is a conspiracy theory. And that's what people won't talk about, yet, because if you buy the official version, there was clearly a conspiracy between Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri, the 19 hijackers. You can't get much more of a conspiracy than that.
Yeah. Well, in this book, in Perkins' book, you will see where the foundation and the groundwork was laid, and it was laid by official U.S. well, not, I should say, I shouldn't say official, but U.S. government officials were compliant and complicit in the kind of financial, global financing, particularly with Saudi Arabia, that got this whole ball rolling.
And, of course, there's Afghanistan, and, we were the, even if you take the most government-friendly view, we still wind up being the authors of our own doom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've definitely got to read that. Gerard, it's good to hear from you. Thank you for sharing the story, the account, the facts about, what you're dealing with Walmart out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening all over the country, but very seldom do you hear someone who's willing to speak to some degree or another from the inside of the animal. And I do appreciate that. That takes courage.
Well, you have a good one, and I hope things go well with your dad.
Thank you very kindly, Gerard. You have a great weekend.
All right.
Bye now. And onward to our good friend Chris in Florence, Alabama. Hey, Chris.
This is Don Rumsfeld. Do you need weapons of mass destruction or an armed militia for your structured settlement or annuity?
Call Rumsfeld and Associates.
Yeah.
BR549.
Yeah, just dial 666 on your Verizon phone, and somehow you'll get in touch with me.
Well, you know, it's kind of like a demonic A-team. You won't find us. We'll find you.
Just take the sorriest-looking yard dog in the community and start beating it, and someone in my circle will find me, and we'll get in touch with you, and you just might be our kind of people. He had to find work after he got out of there, so it wouldn't surprise me, you know.
Oh, no. He's not going, he's not going to get all Dylan Thomas and go gently into that good night. No.
Blood-curdling scream into that mid-afternoon, maybe, but, you know, he's got the...
Howling into cocktail hour.
He's got the buckets. He's got the lie. He's on the street corner. He knows what to do. Yeah, he knows what to do. Okay, let's go back into the time warp machine.
Sherman set the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, Governor Wallace has just announced that it is the duty of all white Alabamians to defend themselves against any Iranian, white male to defend himself against any black Iranian, black male that will harm anyone in Alabama that is,
Ain't much difference, is there?
No, it sure isn't, is it?
Well, I mean, that's what you got the other night when Dear Leader called for his own little the posse.
All we need is Bull Drummond to come back and sick the dogs on the Sunnis and the Shiites.
Jeepers. I wish you wouldn't draw those parallels.
Well, my brother, that is what it is.
A whole bunch of it. Yeah, you're right.
A whole bunch of it. I wrote a piece last night that, I made a comparison that let's just say that this little country, let's just say Iraq, something like Iraq, were to have come over and to have armed and financed the Bowery Boys or the Know Nothing Party. And they could have influenced Tammany Hall or the Know Nothing Party. Would they have made a change in this little country of ours?
No. No.
Okay. We call stuff like what Bull Drummond and them did racist over there. We call it sectarian.
Yeah, that's sectarian violence.
Sectarian violence.
Although,
still the same redneck diner serving hog balls and calling it something else.
Yeah,
it's.
But there is, there's a right. The Republicans were so proud of George for bringing up. We got some bad Sunnis, and they're bad. And then there's some Shiites, and there's bad Shiites too. And it's reactionary Sunnis and reactionary Shiites that you. It's our problem, and all the, and these people were willing to talk about him suddenly because he'd mentioned Sunni and Shia as though he were some sort of Solon. But they didn't. They still haven't gone to the underlying aspect, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but most of Iran is Shia, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And most of southern Iraq is Shia.
Mm-hmm.
Both nations formerly comprised a nation known as Persia.
Yeah.
Are we still on the same track? Yeah.
Yeah.
There is an ethnic flavor to this, because unless I'm profoundly mistaken, and I will stand corrected if I am, the Shia contingent is ethnically Persian.
Yeah.
Or, as is sometimes the word used, Aryan.
Yeah.
The ethnic Sunni contingent is Arab.
Yeah.
And Semitic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a race war, too.
You can break it all down in the two things. The children on both sides bleed the same.
Damn right.
And if Jesus were to come back right now, they wouldn't stick him up on the cross, they'd lynch him.
Yeah, or put him in downtown Basra and scream, look at the Sunni.
Yeah. I'm writing a serial right now that a friend of mine is posting on his website, and it's dealing with a fictional piece, but I'm writing about something that, you know, just might happen before we get out of Iraq. It's about a friend of mine and I as a journalist, and we uncover a situation where our good old private security forces open up fire on some innocent Iraqis. And it turns out that the leader of who's in charge of the private security forces, his uncle is the major that my friend is interviewing at the time.
Good plot.
And the major is going to help cover up what his nephew did. And we know about it, and they're going to try to silence us along with it. So sooner or later, I will bet you my bottom dollar, there is going to be some kind of melee or something massacre between these hired guns running over there like crazy. And they're all mostly ex-military. And boy, don't you know the thin blue line runs camouflage.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you protect your own whether you're there or not, in service or not.
Mm-hmm.
It would not surprise me that this will happen before we're out of there. That there will be...
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if it's already happened.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There will be some big thing.
Well, the lies...
There will be a cover-up, and it will be through the security forces, and people in the military will help cover it up or will be involved in it. And by the time it happens, the situation over there is getting so bad now, by the time it happens, it will just be... like just another day, and it may just get reported, and it'll just be just like another day.
We don't know. And that's the thing. The journalism coming out of Iraq is so damn poor. We have no idea what has happened over there. Story just hit the wires a little bit ago from the Associated Press, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you heard last week about the four valiant American soldiers who died repelling an attack
already,
on the government.
I've already read it.
Yeah, turns out that's just all a big lie. I'm sure they were valiant. I'm sure that they were brave.
Oh, they've already got their little...
But they were killed after the attack. They were kidnapped and taken away somewhere else and killed.
Did you get the really salient point in that? They were kidnapped, Bob, and they were driven... Now, folks, get this. 21 miles, kidnapped in the Iraqi vehicles, insurgent vehicles, and driven 21 miles across Iraq. Okay, we couldn't get planes up to stop the hijackers, the 9/11, but we could get planes up when the golfer and his friends passed out and the plane was going to crash. There the jets were.
True.
We have how much in Iraq right now, and we can't stop some guys in vehicles with our soldiers in it?
Well, that's the thing. There had to be
miles.
There had to be some Iraqi complicity in this.
Absolutely. Okay. We want to talk.
The commando team also dig this. The commando team also took an unclassified U.S. computer with them as its members fled with the four soldiers and left behind an American M4 automatic rifle, senior U.S. military officials
said. You want to
talk
conspiracy theory? What did these four guys know?
There's that, but I think moreover, that was...
Who knows?
That was a warning.
That was... You're damn right it was.
We can
prove
do
us
it.
Wrong. Prove us wrong. Okay, yeah. That was a warning. I agree that was probably a warning. Okay, prove us wrong.
Yeah.
Tell me that it wasn't. Prove to me that it wasn't.
Right.
Oh, you can't say that. Yes, I can too. Yes, I can too, because we have been lied to so much. And this big thing with the Iranians, we can do this, we can do that. You've already lied to us so many times. There's...
Yeah.
Fool me once, shame on me. Well, this is about the 10th or 11th time. Look, I've got no reason to believe you. None whatsoever.
All the officials agreed the four abducted soldiers did not die in the fighting at the compound in Karbala, but it was unclear where they were killed. The attackers fled with the four and the computer and headed east toward Mawil in neighboring Babil province, about 25 miles away. The U.S. accounts did not say where the soldiers were killed. Iraqi officials said the four were captured alive and shot just before the vehicles were abandoned. You know what? We haven't begun to see the truth of this story yet.
No. No, we haven't.
What was done to those four? They weren't just shot.
No, no. No, we had, we were told that they had mobile weapons labs. Why? Is there any reason to believe that we haven't funded mobile torturing?
Well, and see, the other thing here, Chris, is the United States military has lied about this for a solid week. And they haven't just lied to me, and they haven't just lied to you. They lied to the parents of those soldiers.
Oh, that's old hand.
Yeah, it is.
That's old hand.
But it doesn't make it any less sickening.
Okay.
They have lied to the parents of those poor, tortured souls. And they are still lying.
You know, when there has been all this uproar, you know, this candidate's announcing, it just makes me want to puke. I haven't seen one yet. I haven't seen a candidate yet. I've seen minor and medium celebrities coming out and saying, "Look at me." I haven't seen a candidate yet.
Outside of Kucinich, nope. I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. Chris, good to talk to you, brother. Everything doing all right?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good.
How's the youngin'?
Oh, good Lord. Straight A's again, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, it's so tiresome, those confounded straight A's.
Yeah, straight A's, and, you know, I can, you know how tall I am. I'm 6'4".
Yeah.
I can stand with my arms straight out and my arms on top of her head.
She gonna be tall, too.
10 years old.
gonna be big enough to whip you soon.
Well, in about a little over, sometime about mid-March, I'll be in New Orleans. So whenever I come home, in a little over a month or so, when I come home to visit, I'll have to keep running.
Chris, you take care, all right? Good to hear from you, brother.
Nice to you, my brother.
Bye now. I want to share a couple of things with you. Headline, Gates, Anti-Iraq Resolution Helps Enemy. Now, this is at the same time, he's saying this at the same time that he knows. He's been briefed. Come on, he's the Secretary of Defense. He knows his military has been lying for a week about the slaughter of those four poor soldiers. Oh, those poor, poor families.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates said Friday that a congressional resolution opposing President Bush's troop buildup in Iraq amounts to undercutting U.S. commanders in a way that, quote, emboldens the enemy. They're doing it again! Yeah, if you oppose the war, you embolden the enemy. That's questioning my patriotism. I don't like that very good, Bob Gates. Again, they could... This is the guy who, when he took the defense secretary job, was president of a university in Texas that could barely beat the Baylor Baptists. Expecting him to beat the Baghdad Baptists is unreasonable expectations. At his first Pentagon news conference since taking office, Gates was asked his reaction to the debate in Congress over the effect of such a non-binding resolution. Quote, "It's pretty clear that a resolution that in effect says that the general going out to take command of the arena shouldn't have the resources he thinks he needs to be successful certainly emboldens the enemy and our adversary." You damn liar! You dirty, dirty, dirty damn liar! No one's saying he can't have the resources he needs. It was not said. General David Petraeus is not going over to a military that is wanting for guns and bullets. He will be able to call in airstrikes and rain bloody death on civilians all over Iraq. Neighborhoods, hamlets, mud huts, poof, done, bomb, gone. Liar. And the United States Senate said, "Ooh, he said we're having a hard time in Iraq. Oh, let's confirm him yesterday. We'd like him." Punks. And, well, I'll tell you what. We're going to go to the literary corner in just a moment. Go to the phones first. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How's it going, Luke?
Well, I tell you what, I've been listening. You had some good things on tonight. Like I say, I've got to the point now about the only two people I listen to over in Iraq that I trust are either Michael Ware from CNN or Laura Logan from CBS. They're about the only ones because you can tell they're both fed up with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, she got to the point, Laura Logan, where she's, you know, begging for people to tell the truth, the media to tell the truth about Iraq.
Apparently they have this story that they will not show on the air. They've got it on their website, but won't show it on the air because apparently it was the fight for Haditha Street or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That apparently it's on the website and you can go see it there, but they don't advertise it. And because apparently this thing essentially says these people are just about ready to, the people in the streets are about ready to run away. You know, if they could, they would.
Yeah.
But, no, the other thing you're talking about, you know, don't trust them anymore. You noticed the thing they started a couple of weeks ago was Iranian weapons.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, okay, let's see them. You know, let's put a stack of them out here. I want to see them. And
get one of those friendly embedded reporters and a camera and come take some.
It's like I say, probably when they get done, they'll have a couple of AR-1s sitting there going, oh, these are them.
Well, that's how can you tell? Are there AK-47 factories in Iran? I mean, maybe there are.
But you got to remember, though. I mean, just think, you know, with the Russians were next door. Those things when they were in Afghanistan, those things got to be all over the place.
Well, think about the weapons dumps that we drove by. Remember those?
Oh yeah. Well, and you know, and there were reports that when we were first training the Iraqi security forces, these guys were going out and selling their weapons on the black market. You know, when they would run off, they were taking their weapons with them and selling them. And who knows what all those Iraqis, you know, who we, when our viceroy decided to close up the army, wonder where all their weapons went.
Oh, they beat them into plowshares.
Sure they did, yeah. But,
The whole country was an ammo dump, and we were, I don't see any mustard gas canisters in here. Bunch of dang rifles, though. All right, got to move out. Hit them up.
But, you know, you were talking earlier, though, about framing the question with that thing like the thing with Ted Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, that's the questions we got to start asking in those simplest, not simple, you know what I mean, but basic terms. You know, why do you all hate the middle class?
Well, you know, we had 6 years of why do you hate America?
Yeah. You know, or they were talking about the, you know, them having the vote in the Senate thing where Hagel joined with the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently, you know, you had a whole bunch of these Republicans who, when they were talking, you know, oh, yeah, we don't think it's a great idea. Now we're going to vote. Okay, we vote with the Republicans.
Because we love our party more than we love our country.
I mean, it's one of those things where they need to start having, you know, the talk the talk and unable to walk the walk, you know, things. Where, you know, how many of these people are up for a re-election in 2 years? They ought to start already running the things, you know. Why can't you stand up for what you believe?
Well, look at, Luke, how many people who make $5 million a year are there in America? There's a whole lot fewer people who make $5 million a year than there are people who make $5 an hour. If that's the case, that would make the $5 an hour crowd a majority as compared to the other.
Oh, yeah.
So if you won't give the $5 an hour people a raise, it is legitimate to ask the people who won't do it, why do you hate America?
Well, you know, it's like I saw something the other day where they were talking about the two-parent family. You know, when they were talking about some of this stuff, they said, you do realize now the two-parent family is virtually a minority.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to that point.
And the single wage earner family is almost non-existent.
Yeah. And, you know, it's getting to that point.
But we have a very vibrant economy, Luke.
I know.
It's very vibrant. Worker productivity is higher than it has been since the freeing of the slaves.
Did I tell you something I saw while I was sitting here waiting? I had on Oberman on mute, and apparently they had Isikoff call in, Mr. Isikoff from Newsweek.
Yeah.
And apparently Mr. Libby's group has subpoenaed Mr. Rove and Mr. Bartlett to come testify.
Oh, won't that be fun?
And apparently they had written on the little thing underneath there, White House is concerned. It's like they, I've been following this thing slowly, and I don't know if everybody's been following it. This thing is getting interesting now because now you have the CIA briefer and two or three others in the thing that have said, oh, yeah, we're the ones who told Cheney and Libby that she was a CIA agent. And at the same time, the briefer from the CIA is saying, oh, yeah, and I told them, do not tell anybody this. This is highly sensitive information. So the question is going to be when good old Bionic Dick gets up there on the stand, well, Dick, are you going to stick to the story you've been telling where the reporters told you? Or are you now going to admit the truth that, oh, by the way, my briefers told me?
Are you going to call your briefers a bunch of damn liars?
That's the thing. It's like, now, Dick, now, the question is, which one are you going to explain?
Yeah, but wait, Luke, you know, follow it out. It gets even more fun. If the briefers are a bunch of damn liars, then that means they were a bunch of damn liars about Iraq, too, doesn't it?
Well, just remember somewhere in this, the words, Dick, can you say the word perjury?
Well.
And remember, Dick, that's what they went after Clinton for, perjury.
Damn straight. And remember, Dick, Agnew went first.
Well, the thing is, if Dick goes, you got to wonder how soon it's going to be before George goes, who tells me what to do now? Who tells me what to do
this
now?
This is the old analogy of the water and the frog. See, the vice president's office thought that they were putting Libby into the pot by himself. They didn't realize they were in it together, and now the water's getting a little hot, and it's too late to hop.
Well, you got to wonder, maybe if this is the genius now, Fitzgerald, that he figured, now, if I try to indict two or three of them, they'll just lawyer up and turn it into a wall, you know what I mean? You know, wall up. And you got to wonder now if they think that, you know, since I just take one, but I picked the right one, you know, will that...
And remember,
the domino theory, you know what I mean?
Fitzgerald has 5 grand jury appearances worth of sworn testimony from Karl Rove.
Hey, Karl, I hope you were keeping notes, too. You better keep your story straight.
So, you know, I got the, what did Bart Kopp call him today? Fitzmas, don't be late.
Yeah. One other quick thing before I go. I know you're running out of time. Did you see the story on Glenn Beck today in the Washington Post?
No, I'm kind of grateful I missed it.
Okay. Well, they were talking about it, that a couple of these Arab groups
have been petitioning GMA about hiring him. You know, saying, why are you all doing somebody who's obviously anti-Arab, Arabian? And I was sitting there reading, and I read through the story, and you know, and amazingly enough, the good old Washington Post, nowhere in that story did they talk anything about the other controversies. That's the only one they do. They go into the Keith Ellison thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But amazingly enough, they don't mention anything else. And you got to wonder, being there at the Washington Post, if Mr. Kurtz came down and said, no, you can't include that.
No, he's one of ours.
Yeah. So, oh, but what?
It's getting interesting, without a doubt.
Well, like I say, I hope, you just got to wonder at what point is Cheney and company going to try to do something to shut down the
I'm living for the moment with Cheney on the stand, and he's going to have, I fooled them with the strawberries. They thought I was crazy, but I fooled them. Luke, have a good weekend.
Yeah, good too.
See ya.
Bye.
I watched too many movies as a kid. David's calling from Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello, Bob. If you think you're going to get rid of Dick Cheney, you could just forget about it. Has anybody mentioned to you the fact that one Donald Rumsfeld has never left the Pentagon? He's still there.
Huh?
He no kidding. Purportedly so that he can properly, and I'm quoting, properly sort through his papers as to what should be donated to the Library of Congress and what should be dealt with from a national security matter.
Dealt with from a national security matter. That means shredded, right?
If his choice. But the funny thing is, it's not unusual for a Secretary of Defense that's been in place that long to have a chance to thoroughly, with some organization, clean out his office. The only problem is, Bob, he's got seven staff members, and two different independent sources have reported that he is writing and sending as many outgoing memos now as he ever did. Can we say Gates is, you know, it's a Gates mask, Bob?
Yeah.
That's all there is. And one other little detail, getting back to this, him same minimum wage thing that went down. You guys may have mentioned it. I missed part of the show last night and tonight, but has anybody really stressed how many American workers are to be affected by a federal minimum wage bill of the dollar value they are proposing? Has anybody said that number?
No. In fact, I'd like to know what it is.
It's less than $1.5 million, Bob, nationwide. Progressive states have put minimum wage laws in place to the extent that a federal minimum wage, as blocked by that SOB from Kentucky, would affect less than $1.5 million workers across the entirety of the nation. They're just doing this so they can suck up to their bloodthirsty corporate base. That's all this is about. Now you feel better, don't you?
And worse.
1.5 million workers would get a 75 cent on average raise if this goes through as written.
If the Republicans in the Senate would stop being asses.
Exactly. Because there are states like California, Oregon, there are various states around the nation that at the end of a 3-year time period, there are 11 states in the United States that have state minimum wage laws in place that are greater than the minimum wage law that the Republicans are blocking would become 3 years down the road. Economic impact is as negligible as anybody can imagine. But they got to stay the course on screwing the American worker and prove to everybody they hate the guy that has a time card. So, there we have it.
Of course, the other side of that argument, David, is where they say, well, this isn't that important. It's just 1.5 million people.
Well, the other side of that.
But I'd be willing to beat him over the head with that, too. 1.5 million.
Well, the real other side of that, if I may be so bold, is what the hell are the Democrats only going for that? Why don't they put something out there that's meaningful? Why don't they start about $2 up from where this bill is supposed to be? Yeah, just try to have, just try to be a married guy and want a decent apartment on $9 an hour. And they're not even talking about $9 an hour.
Jesus. How Scrooge-ish, how rotten do you have to be to put up a fight over that?
Well, that's why I thank Teddy Kennedy. Teddy's pulled some stuff that I'm not real crazy about, never mind the grocery list, but I really think he can, he's mortal. He understands that. If anybody understands mortality, a guy named Kennedy would. I think he wants to make a really big splash from the pond he's in, and I applaud him for saying it as plainly and definitively, and I don't begrudge him that he didn't do this 6 years ago, because it would have been worse than a voice in the wilderness. He's got a chance to make some noise and have it heard. You know, if he cuts a couple of these trees down, somebody will hear him fall. So,
well, and by the same token, I was proud of Kerry for coming out and saying what he said. I'm going to stay and fight to end the war.
That's that man's brightest moment in the last 6 years.
And it's a fight that, I don't know. Is it the Massachusetts delegation that has to lead the way for the up or down vote? I mean, for the life of me, I can't understand why they won't play the same kind of hardball with the Republicans that they played with us. See, I don't think the Republicans would have eliminated the filibuster. They just wanted to see who would blink first. You know the game, David.
Oh.
And we blinked.
Of course. Unfortunately, this bipartisanism, this we can't be bad people, I've heard it said before. I heard Bill Moyer say it one night. There are some issues that the other side should not be allowed to speak. It's rare, but their voice, I'm sorry. Adolf Hitler, I'm sorry. There should be no rebuttal. Hitler, bad. Stop it now. There should be no rebuttal. And there are some things that just, we need to be aggressive. We should not compromise with evil people. And these are evil people. You know it.
Yeah.
Sarge knows it. Bob knows it.
There's not a balanced other side to, you mentioned Sarge, there's not a balanced other side, David, to should we rebuild the Gulf Coast?
Bob, a couple of things. One of them, I thought I had damaged this puny little television I had. When that woman that's invested enough money in hair care products to feed a family on the Gulf Coast for a week got 6 minutes worth of State of the Union about baby Einstein, a woman that's created another product for an idiot yuppie to put in front of a drooling two-year-old. There wasn't one Agnes, watch the button. There wasn't one goddamn word about New Orleans.
Nope.
Oh, there's holes in the wall around my television.
Like I said, we started out the State of the Union with the peanut butter and banana sandwich right next to it and just waiting for the Elvis gun.
Well, I ran through all the soft stuff, and finally, luckily I've got spackling. Luckily, I know where to buy the same color paint. I can fix the little dent that's in the wall, but lordy, I don't care about that woman and her ways to make some suburban kid. So what if she's selling $200 million worth of gugus to suburban?
It's uniquely American.
Yeah, right. It's uniquely American to spend $200 million on babies that are going to go to good schools anyway, when babies that don't have a good school and can't even get to school safely won't get anything out of that deal. The woman might as well have...
We're up to our neck in SOBs, David. You understand that.
The woman might as well have invented a better wax for BMWs, as far as I'm concerned.
You said wax, and I was waiting for something that would have sent Agnes for the button. But, thank you for going to BMW.
Well, good. Sorry about the incredibly profane and...
No, that's okay. No,
That's all good.
Well, you've got things to say, and I need to shut up.
David, have a great weekend. Thank you.
Yeah, you too.
Bye now.
Bye.
That's it. Thanks for a great week, everybody. Congratulations to Agnes on her maiden voyage behind the microphone. The show was produced by my lovely, talented, darling, budding talk host wife, Agnes. It was engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia, announced by Brian Reznor, Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional, and he may soon be an IT professional with DSL. Oh, our fingers and toes are crossed, I tell you, crossed. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programming on the Horn. He's got a fundraiser going on. Make the little thermometer thingy go up, please. Thanks to our moderators in the chat room. You should come by sometime if you've never been. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. And thanks most of all to the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. There's thousands of them. They get up every day and they go and they build the American dream and they support this network and they help to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Earlier vote scrambles the race. 2008, Hillary versus McCain. Hillary's Hollywood friends switch sides. Kerry rules out joining presidential race. Obama calls for universal health care. Cheney says Hillary Clinton would not be a good president. Carl Bernstein says Bush administration has done far greater damage than Nixon. UN climate report will shock the world, says the forthcoming commissioner on the report. GOP and House calls Dems heavy-handed after majority rams through six for 06 bills. Republicans are exasperated and angry. Wah, Republicans, wah. Russia-India cement nuclear ties. Russia slams U.S. space weapons plans. Military shows off new ray gun. Holy science fiction. Senate committee repudiates Bush on Iraq. Dems seek GOP support on Iraq resolution. New York cracks down on talking on a cell phone while cycling. What about the damn cars? And a study says Americans spend more time with computers than spouse. Hope you guys spend more time with me. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.